It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great show lined up for you. Yes, we'll talk a little bit about Pokemon Go, but also give you a tour of the new iOS 10 beta and why you may or may not want to use it. OS 10 Sierra as well. All the Mac news and a little bit more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 515, recorded Tuesday, July 12th, 2016. A burrito-sized battery charger. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/MacBreak and join Trunk Club today. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, business, or online store. Enter our offer code MacBreak and get 10% off. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, or in this case, Pokemon Go Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Apple. Alex Lindsay's here, joining us from his dungeon in San Rafael. How are you, sir?
It's a nice dungeon, though. It's got soft walls. It's not. There's not a lot of stone. So that's,
some call those padded walls, but okay, soft. That's
they keep on
way.
Telling me they're nice walls. I was like, these seem like a lot like padded walls, and they do let me out of the vest for the show. So
is it underground?
It's not underground. No,
it feels that way.
Yeah, it does.
One of the reasons I ask,
I like it that way.
Our new studios, you know, the studios now are really nice because I have, as you know, you've been here many times. In fact, you even used to work in this building. Windows, which is rare for a studio.
It's really annoying.
It's hard to light. So the new studio has no windows. And I just realized, oh, I wonder how I'm going to react to that. Because I really like the idea that I could see the outdoors now. And I don't know if I'm going to like having 6 or 8 hours a day in a windowless room, but it's okay, especially if the walls are nicely padded.
Oh yeah, I don't like windows.
Neither do I.
Well, the problem is windows give me a sense of what time it is, and then it reminds me that I just work 16
hours. Editors hate windows.
I like it to just be controlled. So I'm just working. I'm in my little space, and it's not connected to a certain time. And you know that, and then I don't feel bad that I'm working into the middle of the
graphic night. Designers, editors, gamblers, they all hate Windows.
Yes.
Renee Ritchie is here from imore.com, which is of late been PokemonGo.com.
Sorry, Leo. I'm trying to capture a very rare Laportamon. I keep missing him.
I love how you guys, even though you're in Canada, jumped on this. Although Serenity is in the U.S. and she did most of us
are in the U.S. I'm one of the few who's doomed to be.
You and Georgia were all over it, right?
Georgia was away camping, and now she's all upset about it. But yeah, Daniel Bader is the other one who's in Canada. Serenity was all over it. Lori Gill, Micah Sargent, everyone just dropped everything, came in, and
it was interesting to watch all of the tech blogs go Pokemon Go crazy. There's Georgia playing it with you.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is that, like, and we can get into it on the show, but there was a lot of anger, resentment, and, oh, why are you covering this? And that was from, like, the 0.5% of people who consider themselves a tech elite. Meanwhile, tens of millions of people were having the time of their lives and just wanted to know how to play better and easier.
Right.
And I think that once in a while, we need to reorient ourselves with the rest of the population.
Well, I for one, read all the articles because they don't give you any instruction on how to play the game.
No.
Which is smart. That's the new thing. Is not teach anybody anything about, look at all of these.
And Serenity was out all day trying to figure out how to get each Pokemon. I mean,
yeah, I'm not in a hurry. I'm gonna enjoy this for a while. Andy Naka is also here from the Chicago Sun Times. Great to see you.
Great to see you as well. I saw talk about Pokemon suddenly like resurge all over Twitter for reasons that I at the time didn't understand, and then I found out what it was, and then what I didn't understand is, wait a minute, so lots and lots of people are having a lot of fun with a game that they enjoy, and their enjoyment of this thing doesn't affect you in the least. You always should be careful about making a statement that translates to other people are having a good time and this offends me in some fashion.
Yeah, but if you don't want, you know, I mean, you know, if you're not playing for any number of perfectly good reasons, it must be a little annoying that every tech journal in the world is now just obsessed. Well, I mean, even like I'm watching the Nightly Business Report.
Yes.
Even the stock market, because the Pokemon stock is at its highest point since 1983. Yep. And so it is a business story as well. And I think part of the reason in the United States, certainly, that we were really welcomed it on Wednesday is it had been such a rough week, a week that got even rougher the following day. Yep. And so having something a little lighter and fun that brought people out of their houses into public spaces, talking mm-hmm. about light things and fun things, was more than welcome this week. So this past week. So there's a lot of reasons. And, you know, the guy who the CEO of Niantic, which created this, they're the folks who he came from Keyhole, which was the satellite mapping company that Google bought to add satellite mapping to Google Earth and to Google Maps. Then he and some of his engineers, I think, said, hey, Google, we got some ideas to using mapping in a recreational way. They created a company within Google called Niantic. They did Field Trip, which was an interesting but ultimately kind of annoying app that told you points of interest as you walked around town, actually spoke them out loud to you. Then they did Ingress, which was very popular. I know Father Robert walked hundreds of miles playing Ingress. A few of the people around here got the Ingress bug. I tried to play it. It was a little opaque, a little complicated. And a little,
our guys in Rwanda play it. Like, there's
it was a
place right
dark,
out there. Some of the hotels that they keep on
very
taking
sci-fi.
Back from some other team.
Yeah, I didn't like the thing that you would go up to government buildings and then the thing would say hacking government building, and then you would be doing these things out front. It just seemed dangerous.
Yes.
You know, and it was also a case, and I bet you that people feel this way now, that if you didn't get in early, like all of the pokey stops and the gyms are all immediately occupied by avid players who spend a lot of time. And if you don't spend a lot of time, and Ingress was the case. The thing about Pokemon is at least it's light, fun, and lively. Mm-hmm. And it appeals particularly to 20-somethings who played Pokemon, the Nintendo games or the card games in their nostalgia. You're that age, right? Did you play Pokemon as a kid?
I mean, I hate saying this, but I always preferred Digimon to Pokemon. And I guess I backed the wrong horse in the Ultimate. Yeah. I thought that was just a much better property, but now it's gone nowhere and Pokemon is everywhere. But yeah, the minute you hear the theme song, you just think of your childhood. So it's got very powerful vectors.
For me, it's my kids' childhood because Henry was really into it. I remember we had to stop at 7-Elevens every time we went by to buy a new pack of Pokemon cards. He played the card game, which was actually, I encouraged him. It was like Magic. Mm-hmm. I think it was a good, challenging and interesting card game. They did a lot of card trading, but I remember that as a kid, baseball card trading didn't seem so very different. So I encouraged that as a passion of his. The funny thing is when I texted him when this became all the rage, he's 21 now, he poo-pooed it because I think it reminded him of his child. It was like too childish for him. So he said, oh, yeah, finally they came up with something to get the nerds out of their basement.
Although one of our most popular articles is how to do Pokemon Go without having to walk anywhere. So, I mean, go figure.
How do you do it without walking anywhere?
You get a lot of incense and I forget what those things are called, the lures. A lot of incense and lures.
Well, we're lucky. We have a Pokestop across the street. So yesterday somebody put a lure in it. And a lure draws Pokemon so you can just relax, sit around, and they come to you. But what also comes to you is a bunch of players. There were all these people skulking in storeways going, and I would go, Pokemon! Pokemon! It's kind of, and then you'd say, what team are you on? And sometimes I've had a number of conversations with people around Petaluma, and boy, you see a lot of people walking around.
Are they Jets, Leo? Are they, when you're a Jet, you're a Jet? No.
You know what? Everybody's pretty jolly about it. I stole somebody's yellow team's gym yesterday, and then I saw them sitting on the picnic table at the park across from it. And I said, I just got this gym. What team are you on? He said, yeah, that was mine. And it was fine. It wasn't, we didn't get fisticuffs or anything. It was cute.
Well, that was the point. My colleague, Russell Hawley, he lives in Maryland. He went out to the big park to see, you know, just how many people were playing because he didn't want to assume that it was getting people out and getting them together. And they were. There were just tons of people from all over the place. And there were groups of people who had nothing in common but Pokemon and were sort of brought together in this sort of collective moment.
So I think we could agree. And the CEO of Niantic said, you know, that was the goal of the game, get people out and about, walking around, much like Ingress, talking to one another. There's a third goal that's hidden, which is that all of your mileage is recorded in kilometers. And I think it's a secret plot to get the United States to convert to the metric system.
You're one of three countries left, Leo. We'll get you.
By the way, only three countries so far can play Pokemon Go legitimately. That's the U.S., yeah. New Zealand, and Australia. And they've slowed down the international rollout because they can't keep the servers up. It's very much like the early days of Twitter with the fail whale. It's always
down. Did you see the metrics? They were about to pass Android active users on Twitter users on Android. They were more popular as a search term than porn. Like, how often does that happen? And just the growth spike. I've never seen a growth. Like, I've seen iPhone launches. I've seen Google launches. I've never seen a spike like that.
Have we? Is this unprecedented? Is this like Flappy Bird, say?
Oh, this is way bigger. I mean, Flappy Birds was interesting, and maybe we did like three or four articles on it. But, and I don't know if Google got caught by surprise too and was just trying to backfill search, but they were taking anything that anybody would write. And then, of course, like yesterday, the business pubs woke up and Wall Street Journal is all over it. Mm-hmm. And it's for reasons, just the demand. I've never, ever seen demand like this for any form of, you know, connected product or product.
It went from you haven't heard, it didn't exist, to it's all anybody's talking about. That's about as big a success that anything can have. Yesterday morning, it was like monologue jokes everywhere.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert had a really good one saying that its developers have done the impossible. It's invented a phone game you can't play on the toilet.
I felt pretty excited about it. I was looking for a new game. In fact, I said this a couple of weeks ago. There's nothing.
And underneath, like the Pokemon, like, is something that attracts a lot of people, which is why Ingress probably didn't take off to the same extent. But the technology underneath it is fascinating. You have this augmented reality, and you have a way of interacting with a virtual world around you. And this is all super interesting stuff. And if it gets that more into the mainstream faster, I think that's a wonderful thing.
It's bad news for Apple's iOS 10 beta, because if you do the iOS 10 beta on your iPhone, the augmented reality stops working.
It's still working for me. Like, it works like 90% of the time.
It says it can't detect the phone's orientation, so we're not going to go into augmented reality.
Oh, I just ignore it. I just click OK, and it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've had zero problems because once in a while, I can't see the creature. Like, I think once I couldn't see the creature in augmented reality. I turned it off, killed the creature, went back, and it was fine.
There is a bug, and I don't know if it's iOS 10 related. I don't think it is, where you catch a Pokemon, and, you know, you catch these creatures with this Pokeball. It's a little like Ghostbusters. It goes into the ball. Yep. It falls there. It struggles a little bit, and then you get it. But I haven't had this problem on Android, but on iOS, it fairly frequently freezes at that point. I think if the servers go down simultaneously, and you have to force close it to start the game.
I haven't had that. The only problem
you haven't had that. Maybe you're better in Canada. Maybe
the only thing that I've seen the complaint about is that some people got really nervous because of the Google account permissions on iOS, right. And I just made a secondary Google account and went on with my life.
So here's the story on that, and this was Niantic says this is a bug, and they're going to push a fix.
Yep.
You can sign up in one of two ways. They have a Pokemon Trainer Club. You can sign up through that, which is, you know, kind of more traditional email.
Which wasn't working for me for most of the weekend.
No, because, again, they're swamped.
Yeah.
And so many of us just chose to use our Google account. Normally, when you do OAuth the Google account, you get a page that says, here's the permissions. Do you allow this? I did not get that, as I remember.
Me either.
When I signed up. And so then I checked on my Google account. You could quickly do this, too. If you check your connected apps with Google, you can see what permissions apps have. And the highest level of permissions is basically all access. It can read and write your email. It can do anything with your Google account except change the password. And this has those permissions. Doesn't need those permissions. It's too bad that they made this mistake, but they say they're going to fix that. So if you go to the page that says apps connected to your account, you can go through them. Now a browser is going to have full access to your Google account because, of course, you know, if you want it to open Gmail and look at Gmail, it has to be able to do that. But you'll notice in the operating system, same thing. But only a few apps have that kind of full access. Most of the time, they have limited access. But here's Pokemon Go. It has full account access. So
which means email, Drive, photos.
Everything. Now, they say, oh, that was an error. We're not going to take advantage of it. We're going to push a fix out. But if you're worried, you could do what Renee did, which is remove the app connection. You see there's a big remove button. and then sign up with a different Google account or try.
It's super easy to make. It took me all of 2 minutes to make a dummy account and sign back. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to, like, I don't want to be paranoid, Leo, but if you were a giant evil movie company and you did want to map every single person on Earth, giving them a fantastic game is the best way to do it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are concerned about that because, in fact, Jonathan Zdarsky, one of our favorite Apple security gurus, said, boy, if it's, they've figured out a way to get the GPS coordinates of every human on the planet. But so what?
Every fun-loving human on the planet, Leo. The grumpy people will be just fine.
What do you do with that? I don't think that's...
Well, but that's the question. It's very, very smart that every time like a really cool new game or a really cool new photo app or anything appears and they're not charging money for it, to at least just ask yourself what is the purpose of this thing from the developer's point of view. So you shouldn't necessarily go into full alert mode when you find out that it has access to Google, but because, again, new release, it could be just a mistake. But these are questions that you really, really should be asking yourself every time you use something. There's never forget that you are giving this app and unknown operators access to your location, perhaps access to other data off of your phone. And you were probably so dazzled by the dancing cartoon figures that were pointing to the accept the terms of agreement and let's have fun together thing that you didn't know what's going on. And it's also a lot of really good things are happening, I think, because of this game, including people going out and getting some vitamin D into their systems. But one of them is that a lot of people who are terrified of Google don't understand that, well, there is, you go to security.google.com, you can basically look at everything that's going on and say, no, I don't want that to happen anymore. Boop, you're gone. And like Renee said, it's easy to, if you know how things work, it's very easy to simply create dummy Gmail accounts and dummy Google accounts. I actually have several Google accounts for different purposes. And so informed is best shielded.
We should point out that this is a freemium game because it has in-app purchases. Just like Simpsons Tapped Out or We Rule, you probably strongly incented to end up buying some coins with real money.
I just wanted to point out, Leo, there's a secondary advantage using a dummy account, and that is some people are getting frequent logouts and trying to log back in, and that gets flagged by 2FA as almost like an attack because you're doing it too often, and they get rate limited, and then they're locked out. So if you are seeing flakiness or anything like that, it's easier to just move it to an account you don't care about.
That's well, and,
you know, my big thing is I have a dummy account that I use for most every logins. You know, that is like a game, and that kind of keeps everybody disconnected from most of my stuff. And if someone hacked into that, I guess they'd take over all of my gaming, but that would be about it.
Yeah. And, you know, if I look at my apps connected to my account, most games use, you know, connect like this Board Defenders to Google Play, and that's how you would have a gaming account. But I understand why they wanted more than that, because what's nice about using the Google account for Pokemon Go is I can use it on an iPhone or Android phone, and it's the same character. It's cross-platform, which it wouldn't be if it were Google Play connection. So
and I like it. I like it also because it's not connected in the same way. Like Facebook really bothers me when they say, and we want a list of your Facebook friends, and we want
they don't
a list
that.
Of all those things. No, but I'm saying any of them, I prefer to always use my Google, you know.
I suspect they will do that account. Though, because they're talking about ways to team up and know what team your friends are on. They're talking about additional, be able to trade Pokemon back and forth, which is a big part of the gameplay in the card game, and I imagine they'll add many of those features. So I wonder, you know, how many permissions they'll want. And if you do look, you should look at your apps connected to your account, as Andy said, security.google.com. You'll notice there are apps that have full permission. All your browsers do, your operating system. I have Ubuntu, for instance, has full access.
And to Google's credit, they pop up a request or asking you to look at the stuff periodically, which I really like.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not unprecedented to have full access to your Google account. But it's I would say unprecedented for an app and a game to do that. And in fact, I don't have any other. The only things that have full access are my browsers and operating systems.
It's like the Radio Shack. Why do you need my phone number just to sell me a set of batteries? You don't need to know that I know for a fact that you're selling this information to the Russian nationalists. Like, no, it's like do you need this information? No, okay, then I'm going to opt not to give it to you. Just like every time you buy something online, the big form is you need to know my PayPal information and you need to know my address and maybe you. But it's like when you start asking what's your Twitter handle, what's this, what's that? Try leaving things blank because you don't give people information that you don't think they need. And if they insist on getting it, ask them why they need that information.
you don't tell somebody, it's, you know, you don't have to worry about it getting leaked.
There are also cranky people, who, many of our viewers, who would like not to hear about Pokemon anymore. There is a Chrome extension that you can add to your Chrome, never to see Pokemon again. And at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., there are three Pokestops inside the museum, and they have asked visitors, please, it's inappropriate here. Mm. Do not catch Pokemon. There have also been some private homes that are gyms, and that is also attracting people. And there is a mechanism, I think you documented on iMore, for removing your your place.
From, even just your house, if you don't want people gathered around your doorstep, which is totally your right.
Completely reasonable.
Could you put a lure in? Like, I can imagine putting a lure in having a cranky neighbor and putting a lure in front of their house, just, you know.
The Washington Post interviewed one Holocaust Museum visitor who was playing the game and asked her, Angie, a 37-year-old visitor, said, it's not like we came here to play, but gotta catch them all. Okay.
I'm wondering if, like, how long is this going to go for?
Well, that's the question. Is this a fad? I think this might have some staying power, to be honest with you. Not
especially
at the level
if Niantic can
evolve
it. Like, if Niantic does nothing with it, it's probably going to go, you know, the way of the Flappy Bird. But if they do start doing really interesting things with it and bringing more of the Pokemon elements in it, and especially as other countries come online, because there are many big, big countries that haven't launched yet, that'll at least keep them going with some momentum.
You can bet when I go on my tour of the Baltic in September, I'll be bringing my Pokemon Go.
But he's
with
so
me.
Cold, Leo. He's so cold.
I hope outside. The Hermitage in St. Petersburg is a Poke gym. I'd like to take it over.
The Kremlin is gym.
You'll be catching Pokemon so you can slice them open and crawl inside for warmth like a Tauntaun
Pokemon. I need the Tauntaun Pokemon.
Now, I have to admit that now it's like one of those things that I had a long line yesterday at a post office or whatever, and I which I don't do very often. I don't know what to do. I wonder if there's anything around here. Oh, over there. I can go over there and grab some new ones. So
I think the game mechanics are deep.
All over.
Yeah, I think that there's enough there to keep people entertained for some time. So
I will only do one boring old person comment, not a complaint, but a comment that from my own life, there was a time two or three years ago when it sounds like the dumbest thing ever, it occurred to me. I'm on a tram to take me from like the airport to airport parking. And of course, the first thing I do is like grab my phone, like, okay, I only got 4% battery left. What am I going to do with this 4% battery? And only then, after that many years, I realized, you know, Andy, putting your phone in your pocket and just like staring off into space for 5 minutes is an option here.
Never.
You might even consider that a challenge to yourself. Can you just like think of nothing for? So all I'm saying is to enjoy the game. Never forget that, you know, spending a few minutes in line and just looking at the people in line and enjoying the 1922 styling of the ceiling is an option. Just make sure it's an option.
I think it's not unusual for people to consider boredom a spur to creativity. I think that that's kind of accepted lore.
That's the Zen state. Actually a goal in many societies.
Yeah, that'll spur the creativity. So we live in a society where we are, to steal Neil Postman's term, amusing ourselves to death.
We're counter Buddhists.
Yeah,
I can say that there's so many reasons why not replacing my car has led to really positive things in my life. One of them is that by taking the bus and getting there in like 40 minutes instead of 12 or 13 minutes, it means that I have time at waiting for the bus stop that I'm doing nothing. I have time riding on the bus where I might be reading a book, but I also might be doing nothing. And this has had a really intense cumulative calming effect on my life that I have so much time programmed in which I'm not responsible for not killing people. I'm not worried about, am I going to get there? If I take this exit, I might be able to get there a little bit faster. It's all this time that I have that is spent just, I'm going to simply... I'm just going to simply look at the side of the road. I'm going to go, you know. Also, I did find some kid like dropped his sweet-ass Texas Instrument calculator.
Oh, no.
On the side of the road.
He was on the way to the SAT test.
Yeah, his exams did not go well.
You exactly. are.
And so had I been playing Pokemon,
you wouldn't have noticed that.
this $13 value with a cracked screen.
unless Pikachu is on top of it. I'm finding them everywhere, Leo. They're just all over the place. I think you can write this game to run on this TI.
At the Apple store, there's a Pikachu. That's a Spiro right on the Apple there. Yeah. Oh, man.
Infesting the whole...
And the watch. I mean, oh.
There's nowhere these places aren't... They're just... I mean, iPads.
You know who benefits from this, of course, is the battery. People like Anker, the battery manufacturers, because it's such a battery drain.
And the businesses who are paying for lures to get people to come in. Hey,
I'm telling you, that is...
Have a drink.
I saw our local bookstore, which is brilliant. I mentioned this before the show, but I'll say it again in the show. Our local bookstore posted on Instagram, we're setting a lure at 2 p.m. this afternoon. Come by, have a cup of coffee, read a book, and catch some Pokemon. And what a brilliant marketing ploy.
How long does the lure last?
Half an hour. It's very desirable, though. Because
how much are the lures?
Not much. So what if I were Starbucks in our coffee shop, I would be doing that every day at whatever
the... post a schedule.
Yeah.
Like post a schedule.
Yeah, lure time.
You can say like at 10 a.m. rather than 8 a.m. Starbucks is already annoying. But at 10 a.m. we're going to have a lure, you know?
I think brilliant. Anyway, we'll take a break and come back with something besides Pokemon. You know, somebody in the chat room said... The fact that we're spending all this time talking about this game, which is an iOS game, I mean, there is a tie-in. It's not completely out of character, but just shows that Apple's taking way too long to release a new laptop.
Yes.
I would agree with that. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. You know there's a new phone coming along, and you know that it's probably going to be the phone you want, and you know you have this phone that really still works perfectly well. What do you do with it? Well, don't throw it in a drawer. That'd be like throwing a $100 bill in a drawer. Go to Gazelle.com. Gazelle will buy your old device, smartphone, tablet, even Samsung phones, iPads, broken or not, iPhones, broken or not. If you have an iPod, yeah, they still buy those. They'll buy tablets from a variety of manufacturers, not just Apple, including your Microsoft Surface. And they'll give you top dollar for it. They pay the shipping. But here's the best part. You have 30 days. So basically, you can lock in a price without a commitment on your part. It's only on their part. They commit that for the next 30 days, they will pay you this much for that device. And then, you know, you have 30 days to decide, 30 days to get a new device. To transfer the data over. Once you've decided, they'll send you a box, postage paid, so you don't even have to pay the postage on it. It could not be easier. And then they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit, or if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, isn't it Amazon Prime Day today? If you were a big Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because they bump that up by 5%, so you get a little bit extra. That's the sell side, but you can also buy at Gazelle. Because they'll realize, hey, we've got a lot of this cherry stuff, and they used to sell it on eBay. I think they still do have an eBay store. But they said, why don't we just sell it direct? We'll take the very best stuff, and we'll go through a 30-point rigorous check to make sure not only that it works, but doesn't have any major defects or scratches on the screen, things like that, and sell them back. iPhones, Samsung Galaxy phones. And iPads. You can get the iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, the iPad, the Galaxy, at a very affordable price. In fact, you kind of can choose your own price because you can get it like new or you can get it slightly used, and the price goes down, of course. And the beauty part is you have 30 days to return it, so there's absolutely no risk. And you can even get financing. They have financing by a firm now on all their devices. Very easy to do. Right at checkout, you just provide some basic information, and you can get approved at the checkout. Which is really cool. They also have warranties from Assurance Solutions that cover not just the usual stuff, 12-month warranties that cover water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects, and more. Gazelle, it's a great service, and I love talking about them because I hate seeing all those gadgets just go in the drawer. It's a great way to recycle your old gadgets and get cash, or to buy new gadgets, a replacement, or for your kids. Gazelle.com. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Andy Anako from the Chicago Sun-Times is here. Renee Ritchie from iMore. Mr. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. I have to scroll all the way down the page of show stories to get past Pokemon Go.
It's hard to imagine how big the story is, though, Lee. Like, I don't think people appreciate just how big a launch this was in terms of sheer volume of interest.
Yeah.
And If people are annoyed that they're seeing so many tech sites write about this, it's because they're responding to all kinds of interest in it. I don't know that Ren Caldwell was speaking specifically about this, the Pokemon stuff she was writing, but she said that isn't it great sometimes when you write something that gets more reads than something that you normally write gets for an entire month. I don't know if that was the right one, but I know other people who were in that business saying, I'm both pleased and a little bothered that something I wrote in 90 minutes about Pokemon Go is being read by far, far more people than a review that I took 3 weeks on.
One thing that happens when you see, and we'll see in a month or two, we'll see revenue numbers. And I bet you can easily play this game without spending any money at all. At least so far anyway, and I'm up to level 10, so I haven't noticed any need. However, I bought $20 worth of coins just because I want to kind of pay for it. You know, I want to encourage them to keep developing and that kind of thing. And I'm sure they're going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. This will be a very, very valuable game, even though it's free. And I wonder then, when you start seeing those numbers, does this not spur a whole nother crazy app bubble in which everybody and their brother tries to cash in and make the
Digimon
next big
stop.
Thing. Yeah. I mean, isn't that what happens is people see these, you know, it started when Instagram sold for $1 billion and then WhatsApp for $22 billion. And then people go, wow. And then all these kids come out of college and say, I'm going to write the next big app. Even my son, who has no experience in this, he and his buddies have gotten together and they've decided they've figured out the next big app. They spend probably hours thinking and talking about it. None of them is a programmer or has any skill doing this. They asked me, well, how would we get somebody to write this? And I really want to say, don't waste your time.
If you can figure out a way to scare Mark Zuckerberg and make him think you're taking attention, you have $1 billion.
Yeah, but I guess I would say that, you know, go ahead and give it a shot. That might not be the one that's successful, but learn how to code. I wouldn't say find someone to code. I would say, you know, go out there. You now have the hardest thing about learning how to write code is having something applicable to
That's true.
You know, like when I learned HyperCard, I didn't know anything about HyperCard, and I decided I wanted to run my radio station that I worked at. I had become assistant program director, and I wanted to run the radio station on it because it was all on paper cards, you know. And I was like, "This is crazy. There's got to be a program for this." And so I got my Mac out, and you know, learning how to do it was mostly me just whacking my head against a wall until something came out the other end. And before the dust settled, you know, I then had a little program that would tell you what to, you know, the ads and the reads and the next songs and all the rotations and like all that stuff was built into it. But, you know, and I learned a lot about HyperCard, you know, and that's how I learned how to, before that it was BASIC, and before that, after that it was assembly and machine language, and all of those things were just, I'm going to get a book and I'm going to sit there and figure out how to get done. Now, I have to admit that right now, I feel like, because I'm just getting back into coding now, that, you know, it's much more complicated than it used to be. Yeah. getting started on all the interfaces and the interchange, you know, like I wasn't used to using other people's classes of code and all the stuff. You just
it's a marvelous time now to do this.
Yeah. It's great. It's great if you can. I really did have to like close, pretend that I'd never programmed anything before in my life, because the idea of the modern style of programming where you really do have to think in terms of objects and basically create little Pokemon, set them free inside the window, figure out what these modules you would need to exist, what they need to do, what they need to talk to each other, using other people's code, going to code repositories and just simply copy pasting stuff because it works. It was so hard for me to like change my mentality about that. But to the original point, I wish that I hope that people who get into programming, particularly kids, start off at the stage that every brilliant inventor starts off at. Either A, I'm curious, I want to try to do this, or this thing needs to exist, no one else is making it, I guess I'm going to have to figure out how to make it myself. Because if you start off in any endeavor, whether it's starting a restaurant, whether it's writing music, whether it's writing a book, with the idea that I'm going to start a business that's going to make us a lot of money, you will always fail, because you can only copy what's already out there consciously or subconsciously. And by the time you train up and actually build that thing, you are the 100th person to want to capitalize on some existing success. So, I mean, it's great. The great opportunities for anybody who just wants to create stuff. the difficulty is that a lot of the ground has shifted because you can't. I don't think that an independent developer can have a success on the level of Pokemon Go, because a lot of people are capable of writing that app. A lot of people are capable of writing it even better than it exists right now. Almost nobody can write that and then set up the business and the infrastructure so that when it becomes the thing that everybody wants to play on the same weekend, it doesn't all just crash and take
well,
all
and
over
I, and done I think with that- it. Well, and I think that one of the things that's important to think about with app development is how your business model is going to work. And I think the hardest part is making sure that you can front load. You're either going to get investment or you're going to front load the cost where you're going to charge something for it. So that if it scales, you can, you know, because if you build this into the cloud now, whether you're using Firebase or Heroku or many of the other options there, you can scale up pretty fast with your with your demand. But you have to make sure that you're getting revenue connected.
You have to think Niantic, you know.
Niantic can do it because they
can do it, but they're not. Right? I mean, they're having Amazon tweeted, hey, we can help you, bro. But I think this is a unique challenge. I mean, obviously, we know a lot about scaling these days.
Can't they call Alphabet Leo and ask for a solid?
You'd think so.
Well,
right?
I think that there's two things there. I think one is I think people can get themselves into an infrastructure. If you don't think about it from the very beginning, like we're building – you know, our question
you have to build it to scale. Yeah. Yes.
And we built it into one platform and realized that it wasn't going to scale. And so we're now in this huge, ugly process of moving it to another platform and that will scale. But you have to write all the code from the beginning in a way that's going to do that. And a lot of times you don't do that because, of course, it takes a long time, you know, and it's painful to get that off the ground. So you just want to get it done, get it out.
The perfect example is Twitter. Scale. Twitter was not exactly written to scale at all.
Yes. On Ruby or something.
The fail wheel, you were mentioning it earlier.
Yeah, but they learned, and that's kind of my point, is I think we understand now what it takes to scale.
And Zuckerberg famously was incensed the first time they went down.
Really?
Yeah.
Incensed the first time Facebook went down?
Facebook does not go down. That was, I think, the mantra.
Yeah, so I think the knowledge is out there, and I don't think it's what I find very interesting is companies like Twitter and Facebook seem to share freely what they've learned. It's not like it's a business,
but a lot of people don't want to. Either they think at some point they're going to save money by doing it themselves with their own servers, or they want to keep control of the content. You know, they want to keep it secure in a way that they don't want it to be sitting on, you know, Google's servers or Amazon servers or anything else like that. So, inside of those restrictions, they get themselves into trouble, I think.
Agreed.
Niantic is in San Francisco, and one of the things you hear people talk about is how one of the reasons to be in San Francisco is everybody's walking around South Park and talking to each other, and there's this kind of collegial frenemy thing going on where they go, well, so how did you scale that? Oh, this is how, and they're sharing that information. It's apparently, I'm told, very valuable to these companies. I'm sure I would love to be a fly on the wall right now. On server ops at Niantic and see what they're doing. I mean, obviously they're working 24/7.
I think anytime you can get yourself into a location where there's a lot of other smart people around,
right?
You know, it accelerates. You know, when I was working at ILM, I mean, you know, it was the, you know, when you had a question about Gaussian blur, I mean, the guy who wrote it, you know, was my supervisor, you know, and so. But it was like that for every person sitting around you. So when you were able to basically, every time you had a question about something, somebody had an answer and it was a really good one.
Right.
And that saved me hours of trying to figure something out. And someone would sit there and draw it on a board and then I was done. You know, and I think that whether it's, you know, that was visual effects, but whether it's, you know, business stuff, having that environment. And that's, I still think the power of things like user groups and other things like that haven't been totally replaced online yet, because it's just hard to have that kind of casual conversation over drinks about how, you know, for us, how a streaming server is built to handle 7 CDNs and handle 6 million, you know, viewers at one time is the kind of thing that you have over beers with a friend, but, you know, you would never find online. It's still not Googleable.
Here's a nice little script. If you want to learn how to code, a little Apple script that will dump all of your keychain passwords in clear text without any escalation necessary.
Computers are hard.
Brett and Henry discovered this. Now, we should point out that somebody has to have access to your computer. It just works. Somebody has to have access to your computer, but it could be remote access. So this is a huge problem in the Windows world where somebody pretending to be from Microsoft will call you and say, we see you have a problem on your computer. Our servers are noting a lot of virus activity. And then they run you through some rigmarole that purportedly proves this. And then they say, can we have access? We'll clean it up. Don't fall for this if you are an OS X user, because this person can literally open up a terminal and paste in some code and dump your entire keychain, all of those supposedly encrypted passwords, into a text file, which they can then download. I am a little surprised. This has apparently been a known method for at least 2 years. Renee, I presume this is something Sierra will now fix, maybe sooner, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, attention is like putting a spotlight on something is a fast way to get it fixed. And I looked at it briefly. I didn't have time to dive into it, but it looked like if you'd unlocked your keychain, you could just pull things from it. If your keychain was locked for any reason, then
when you're logged in, it's unlocked, right?
I see. I'm not sure about that, because if you go to the keychain app, it's not unlocked. You have to unlock it to get any access to any passwords. And I'm not sure what state it's
no, that's not the case.
Okay.
That's not the case. You must have some. So if you change your password for your login, then you'll be out of sync with your keychain. But when you first set up a Mac, your keychain password is the same as your login password. Logging into your account unlocks the keychain. And it's been my experience, because I never changed my password, that then if I open keychain access, I can look at any password.
So I can't. It asks me for a password every time. All I have to put in my password.
Could somebody hand me my Mac. I think it's over there. I'll try it. I don't remember ever being asked for a password, but it should be an escalation, right?
Yeah, totally. Like let me just go to a password. If I open, open.
Well, this exploit would require that it had that you didn't have to enter the password, because this is the idea is that it runs unattended. But again, not to fear, somebody would have to have access to your system for that to work.
Yeah. So if I click on show password, it prompts me to enter my Mac password.
All right. Maybe I just don't remember it. Let me open. Make sure that that's the case.
It gives me a lot of information aside from the password. But,
yeah. You know what I should do is just run this script. See what happens.
Make sure the script is safe.
Yeah. Oh, what could possibly go wrong?
I mean, like every week I listen to Security Now, Leo. I'm reminded about how hard computing is.
It's hard. It's hard. All right, keychain access. Let me just
amount of engineering or QA
here's an internet password, and let's see if it's showing the internet password attributes. Show password. Check a box. Yeah, keychain access wants to use your confidential information stored in your keychain to allow this enter the login keychain password, which is the same as my.
Yeah.
So it does ask for that. However, if you then say always allow, it will always allow that.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Yeah, don't do that. And it looks like this always allow thing. All right, let me get this script and we'll try it out here. This could be a lot of fun. Do you want to run it or shall I?
I don't have it.
All right.
And I don't know if I trust it.
Well, it's just an Apple script.
I know.
If you don't trust
I didn't
it,
send it.
Here, hold my beer while I run this script and watch.
I didn't see the RM star dot star.
I know, right?
No, that's
the beauty. Character.
That's the beauty of the Apple script. It is as clear and simple as
is a reverse E, and you run it now. Ha ha ha.
Ha ha. All right, I have to. I'm using.
There's a mushroom emoji.
I'm using for security reasons. I'm using a Linux laptop, but I'll go over to my Apple laptop.
Well, while you're doing that, let's go over another really important tip. Realize that one of the reasons why this thing works is that somebody answered the phone.
Yeah.
And if you just happen if you answer the telephone.
I certainly haven't heard of, and I hear about them all because I do that radio show where normals call. I don't think that anybody's calling now yet to say, hey, I'm from Apple and we see this problem. It's all, but if there's so many more Windows users.
And also, keychain is kind of not like, I don't know how many of my friends actually even know there is a keychain app.
Well,
on
but
Mac.
But
well, it does.
But doesn't matter because it stores it there anyway, right?
A lot of it, given the it just works sort of mentality of macOS, where the OS tries to suggest useful and helpful things. It's storing so many times when you're logging into servers and stuff that you want to add this to the keychain so that humble user, you never have to type this password in again. Yes, of course. Why wouldn't you want to do that? I think a lot of people don't know everything that they've stored in the keychain. So that's another thing where I think it's a good idea, whether because of this exploit or not, occasionally open up that keychain directly in the keychain app and just take a look at what's in there. You might be surprised what's up there.
Yeah, that's probably good advice as well.
And it's really hard to guard against user intent. I mean, that's why phishing works. And that's why, you know, if you have a system that I don't want this on my system, I'm deleting it. Oh, no, we're reinstalling it. I hate that stuff. But if it's like, I type this in and now you have access, yes, protect me from that. But at the end of the day, I type some stuff in and that's hard to stop.
Well, I can't just paste it into the terminal. So, I mean, I think it's AppleScript, isn't it? Yeah, it's got a tell in there. That's AppleScript. So you probably have to save it as an AppleScript. So I guess pull up the BB edit, right?
Yeah, I mean, anything that requires physical, there were a couple other exploits over the weekend, and anything that requires physical access, that's one more step on your failure chain.
Yeah.
I think people were worried about iOS 10 letting you text from, if you allow it, you can do notifications and texting from the lock screen. And that's, again, the battle between convenience and security, and you can turn that off. It's less convenient because you have to unlock your phone every time. But if you leave it on and then you walk away and leave your phone on the bar, someone else can start answering your text messages.
By the way, let's talk about iOS 10 because the public beta came out last week and a lot of people have adopted it. I did. Wouldn't recommend it if your iPhone is your only phone, although it's pretty stable. It's mostly just that some apps don't work quite the same or work at all, right?
And developers still can't upload iOS 10 versions of the apps until it goes into Golden Master. So you don't leave bad reviews, but also they literally cannot fix it for you right now.
Oh, that's interesting.
And are any of the Apple apps still all down? I haven't updated from there, but like Pages and Numbers.
Do they not work?
They were kind of on the iPad, they were opening and shutting. Like
That's funny.
Huh. They're not.
There's so much depends on what else you have installed. That they're working fine for me, but that doesn't mean they're going to work for you.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, like you don't seem to have problems with Pokemon Go either.
No, and you know, we were talking the other day because Tweetbot on my Mac was just crashing for me in beta 1 all the time. And then I looked at it and it was Keychain that was actually crashing. But, you know, two people that I work with, it was working fine for them on their systems. And another person was having the same issue as me. So these things are so complicated now. It's like the butterfly effect. If you have this and this installed, then that will crash. But if you have only this and this installed, then that is fine. So it's more complicated to troubleshoot than ever.
I have to say that my kids have become totally enthralled with the with all of the new messages.
Yeah.
I mean, they're drawing little pictures, and I guess the new thing with the suggesting the next word. My daughter, who's 7 or 6, she'll send you these huge paragraphs
that she just taps next.
She just finds the next. But she doesn't do it randomly. She's trying to like create something crazy.
It's like poetry.
Actually tying together. It's actually a really fun little English project for her of like what the next thing. And so she sends you these paragraphs that you think at first she might have actually written. And then you were like, she would have only written this if she was on mushrooms.
So I hope she's not on mushrooms.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she's not. So
Alex, when you became a parent, did you realize that part of this would involve a daily Turing test with your children?
Is she a robot? I am a robot.
Wait a minute. You're you not human? In bed watching playing video games. You must be somewhere else.
So the two biggest things you'll notice immediately with the iOS 10 upgrade, and again, you should only do this if you don't mind if your phone doesn't work reliably or some of your apps stop working. In other words, probably shouldn't do this on your main phone. But the two things you'll notice are, as we mentioned, Messages has really got a lot of new features. And not all of the ones they talked about, though. And then the new notifications. But let's start with Messages. Renee, is there a way to make the – because they said you can make text bigger.
All working. So all you got to do is force – eventually all the force touch stuff, I believe, will work with on older devices. But for now, you've got to use force – they're working for the force – the 3D touch enabled devices.
Okay.
So there's a little blue send button next to the text field on the right. And if you tap that, it'll just send the message. If you 3D touch that, which means if you press firmly on it, it'll take you to this new screen, which has all the text effects, the bubble effects on one side, and you can tab over.
Does it have this invisible ink?
Yeah, and uns lasers, Leo.
Oh, man, I couldn't find it. Okay, so force touch.
There.
Okay,
yeah.
Or 3D touch, I should say. Oh, yeah. Okay. So 3D touch the send button before you send it. You can annotate previous messages, right? Or you can add text to them.
Yeah. So Apple last year, and I don't know why they waited this year for it. Maybe they were testing it still. They made a little application called Markup, and it was an extension, and it only worked in Mail. You could double click in Mail, and now they've moved that extension because extensions really do work everywhere, into the photo app, into the messaging app, and into other apps where they think that it'll be good to put like lenses or, you know, customer call outs or lines or signatures or anything on that stuff.
I love that feature.
And there's a better one because digital touch can also, you can also take a photo and a video and then use the digital touch stuff on it. So make your head into a giant throbbing heart, draw pictures on it, put taps over it.
Oh, I'm missing out on most of it because I've only, because I didn't, it's a little opaque. There's a lot of, for instance, if you have to tap the controls on the right when you get the touch thing to get a broken, you can do a broken heart. There's all these little hidden things in there.
And there's three apps you can download from Apple which mirror the animated emoji from the Apple Watch. So you just go to Messages apps and then you download those very quickly and you get the thumbs up and the gloves.
Okay.
But there's a little button on the side. Like when you first open the app, you can see them all easily. But then there's a little button on the side that you push and that'll open them all up again. And then you can...
Right. You initially, when you open the text messaging in Messages, you get three controls, two new controls. Go ahead, show us on the screen.
So that's if you want to do an effect. So I can choose, for example, the slam effect. I'll do that again so you can see. Or here's the grow effect. And then you go to screen effects. Also, if you type stuff, like if you type happy birthday, it'll automatically do the balloons.
I did that.
If you type congratulations, this one is the uns lasers. Actually, I should put the sound on for this and I'll do it again because it's just so funny. Let's see if this works. Well, it's not doing sound, but it just fills you up with lasers. And there's also
and how do you get that?
The more you know, comet. Do 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 do. So that is actually I'll cancel out so you can see. So when you have a message, you instead of just pressing on the let me hold this up. Instead of just pressing on the messages button, you force press on it.
Oh, and then you see all that.
And then it gives you the selector.
I did not know.
Yeah.
I don't have my iPhone with me or I would show you folks, but I stupidly
left it. Oh, it's so much fun. And on the Mac, the animation for the only bubble effect that works on the Mac is the invisible ink, but it's really delightful because you have this little congregation of bubbles and blur and you move them out of the way and they quickly try to come back and hide your message. So you got to swipe them out of the way fast.
How do they handle messages created in this new iOS 10 messages when you send it to an unupdated phone or a Mac or
Android? It gives you descriptive text. So if you send, I don't know what it does on Android, but if you're an iMessage user on an older one, it'll say, Serenity responded with a slam effect, or Lori responded with balloons, and then you can just read it off. And on the Mac, only supports a few of them, so you'll get that sometimes on the Mac as well.
And is there a way, one thing I thought we just was missing is being able to take a photo and then being able to draw on it, and then send it to somebody. And that, I couldn't get that to work. Is that working?
It's an extension, yeah. So I'll double check on how you do it in the Messages app, but you should be able to tap on it and just start, you know, marking it up.
Yeah, because I couldn't. Yeah.
So there are some things you should download when you go to iOS 10. How do you find those? Do you look for under software from apps from Apple?
Yeah. Or? So if you're in the apps, there's a. I'll hold this up like people can see it. If you're in here, you tap on the apps button, and that gives you all the different apps that are available. And there's a plus sign that'll take you to the store. And it'll show you all the apps that are eventually if it loads.
So
it'll
Apple's
show you
doing
all the
this Snapchat Pokemon Go thing where you don't, you know, you have hidden features that people discover. There's something fun about that.
Totally. And if I do the App Store thing again, I can, you know, you can choose, like I can send a broken heart emoji or something to people. And
Somebody's pointing out that when Microsoft did this with Windows 8, you know, had hidden corner effects and things, and you had to know to mouse over to the corner to get the charms bar and stuff. People pissed and moaned, but when Apple does it, it's good news. I'll tell you why. People who are using Windows are using it for productivity.
Yeah, so it's a very
don't
simple
want to
theory.
Mess around with it. They're trying to get work done.
There's a very simple UI theory, and you can go back to iOS 7. BlackBerry 10 was about this too. You cannot hide critical functionality. If anything is critical to using the operating system, it has to have an affordance. It has to be apparent. It has to have a button that and text and every affordance you can give it to make it discoverable. If it's something that just adds value, then you can create what they call, you know, some people call it a moment of delight. Some people call it a moment of charm. all that stuff. And it makes you think, oh, I was rewarded for engaging with this.
Right.
And when a UI is really good, it hints at it. Like, you move a little bit. That's why Lauren Brichter was so brilliant with that pull, that scroll to unlock, sorry, that
right.
pull to refresh.
Because pull it down a little bit. People, yeah, it bounces. Yeah.
And people would just play with their phone. So they were doing that anyway. And then they discover something and then you're like, oh, wow. You know, it's a great feeling.
So those are the keys. It can't be a necessary feature.
Yeah.
It has to be just a delightful feature. It has to kind of hint at it or somehow show up. And that's one problem with 3D touch is I'm still not in the habit of 3D touching everything. It's not rewarding enough to get you to do it all the time.
And they can't make it dependent because so many people have devices that don't support it.
Right.
If you were forced to use it, you'd get in the habit of using it.
Right.
But you can use the entire phone without it. So
right.
people just never get the habit.
Right.
Yeah. Let's also point out that this is not a feature that you absolutely need to be able to access in order to use the app. But let's also I'm often in the position of following up something Renee has said with just adding that last puzzle piece because I feel like I have to realize that this. But this is also something that often happens like in our community. Like remember how the idea of all the Android phones and Windows phones that had like the camera element was like bumped out a little bit to accommodate a larger sensor or some other camera feature, and all of the moaning about, oh, you see, it's just so ugly and stupid. You know what? Johnny Ive would have a fit if you showed it to
him. And Apple does it.
And then Apple does it. It's like, you know, it's great. It gives us the benefit of a super slim phone and an improved camera. Only Apple can do this.
That's just... You know, that's what you want. That's what you're hoping for in life.
If your company can create that feeling, then mm-hmm. That's half the work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that for me, I'm now learning mostly from since my kids are playing with it. You know, the two of them, if kids find
this stuff right away. That's why Snapchat doesn't need to show any UI.
Well, and the two of them are like, as soon as someone, you can see these little conversations back and forth. Where they're like Isabella will do something and Malachi will be immediately like, how did you do that? You know, and then the two of them go back and forth and they're always trying to show some new thing.
And that incents them to discover. Yeah,
and then I just get them a cookie and have them show me everything.
That's how I learned Snapchat. I said, Henry,
yes,
how do you use this?
And there's momentum too. Like if your friends start using it and you see it and you discover it, but it's like that's why when companies go bad, they go really bad because it sort of shatters that impression. They're like, oh, this is stupid, and everyone starts thinking it's stupid and nobody uses it. But as long as people are bought in, like Snapchat, it's not that Dalmatian lens is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Is, oh my God, how did you get that? Can you show me how to get that?
Right,
and then you're rewarded because you become like the teacher mentor
the kid,
sort of role.
Yeah, you're the smart one. You get credit.
There was that great story about the Bloomberg terminals where they spent a fortune redesigning them so they'd be easier to use. And the Bloomberg analyst said, this is ridiculous. We don't want people to think they're easy to use. We want this to be incredibly, incredibly difficult to use. And they had to go back and put all the old software on it. And their Snapchat has the same thing. It's like, you taught your dad how to use the VCR. I'll show you how to use Snapchat, Dad.
Let's see. Apple Maps has 30 new flyover locations around the world. These are created by airplane, helicopter, I'm betting now by drone as well, right?
Because I bet you most of them are actually helicopter.
They said it was airplanes when they first started doing this, I think.
I bet you it might be airplanes, but I bet you it's helicopter. The most common way to do this is a stabilized. It's like one of those big balls.
It's expensive, though, right?
Yeah. For some people, but not for – I mean, especially if you're doing something that you're going to show. So if you're going to do a bunch of New York ones, for instance, it would cost you – the helicopters cost about $8,000 for a couple hours of shooting. But, you know, in the grand scheme of what it's going to take to actually do this, because what they're going to shoot is they're going to shoot something where they do a whole bunch of passes at the same thing, and then they are going to take it back and they're going to stabilize it, and then they're going to – in this case, it looks like a lot of times they're slowing it down. So they're probably doing a high-speed camera inside of the helicopter with a stabilized camera system, and then they are shooting at 60 frames a second, 120 frames a second. There's definitely some of those that you can see that they shot that they've slowed down a fair bit because the cars are moving really slowly to get whatever effect that they want. But they are amazing. I have to admit that I sit there and watch my Apple TV.
Who was it we interviewed? It was Chase Jarvis, wasn't it, that we interviewed on Triangulation, who did the book of aerial shots. And I was looking at some of his videos, and I said, boy, that looks a lot like the Apple TV screensavers. And he said, I can't comment. And those are all helicopter, I think.
Yeah, those, helicopter those and drone.
Yeah,
those things blow me away, though, because it's not just, hey, let's put up a camera in a helicopter and fly a pass. With that approach to San Francisco, they go completely down. I'm sorry. But by the time they finish processing the video, it is like from apps from like yeah. From the Pacific Islands, they helicopter in and they wind up lined up.
Oh, it was Vincent LaForêt. That's who it was.
Yes. Razor lined up for on Market Street, and you wind up this bisecting the screen with Market Street. And I'm like, I don't know what skill was required to line up that shot perfectly, or what technology was required to post process it so it looked like it was lined up perfectly. But you know, I am annoyed for exactly 8 seconds saying, oh, wouldn't it be, you know, I'm listening to music right now, Apple TV. Wouldn't it be more useful for you to like screen save the title? They're like, oh, Hawaii. Oh, all right. I'm not listening anymore. I'm looking at the Hawaii footage.
Yeah. Vincent was amazing. He has a lot of still stuff, but he also does a lot of aerial stuff. And
yeah, his whole series super of cities slow-mo at night was amazing.
And, yeah. Just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. Of course, Vincent LaForêt. Yeah. Highly recommend that book, From the Air. I don't know how Apple got them. Apple's not going to tell us. And whoever did it is not allowed to tell us. But there are now many more, 30 new flyover locations. Some of them are kind of like Catalina Island in Southern California. Pinnacles National Park. Martha's Vineyard. Look, there's a candidate, a wild candidate. Omaha, Nebraska. Poughkeepsie. I don't know why you'd...
South Dakota is just nothing but like no features whatsoever. Yeah. And then the University of South Dakota, and then more nothing.
Yeah. Nebraska's a lot of corn. Columbia, South Carolina, Allentown. What is in Allentown?
There's a Billy Joel song.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually in Allentown, but
it's about Allentown.
About Allentown.
Naples, Italy. Go for the pizza. Stay for the mob. Palermo, Akita, Japan. That's kind of cool. Acapulco, Cuernavaca. So these are like, if they do as they did Stoke-on-Trent in the United Kingdom, it's the whole town, or is it just like a little bit of a fly around?
It depends on the area. Some of them are really, really good and really, really detailed, and other of them just have a few big buildings.
Ah. The idea is that you could like here see the Statue of Liberty, and then you'd get a photorealistic 3D view, and you could pan and rotate and stuff. It's not like a tour. It's not like those movies in.
They do have tours where it'll like it's more of a special effect. It'll like zip you around and rotate everything in 3D space and label it for you.
It's not
an
actual
really
movie. It's
It's a 3D. It's like a 3D animated sort of a guided thing.
Apple settled with a patent troll, $25 million chicken feed for Apple, but
all adds up.
Yeah, not good to settle with patent trolls. It was brought by a company called Network One Technologies. They say they had a patent from 1999 that describes an operating system in which documents are stored in a chronologically ordered stream. Wow. The patent actually was from Yale in 1996. Its creator founded a company called Mirror Worlds. They started suing Apple. That lawsuit resulted in a $625 million judgment, later overturned. The patent was then sold to Network One, which followed up with a new one, and they've got $25 million. Apple's also getting licenses, though, to other Network One patents. I wonder what patents.
The process is so broken because the U.S. Patent Office would rather people just sue each other than them have a hard decision on anything.
No, that's what they say. They say, we'll give you the patent and we'll figure it out.
Settle it in court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's horrible.
Well, it's a weakness rather than a totally broken thing. Unfortunately, the patent office can't hire an expert in networking software. They can't hire an expert on switching technology. They can't even afford to hire in as a one-off contractor. Fill a conference room full of pizza and Diet Coke and say, here are all the patents regarding switch technology. You expert engineers, tell us which are unique. They really have to say, first pass, is this unique or not? Looks unique, great. We will let the industry themselves decide whether this is really unique or not by fighting it out in court. I don't know how else they could do it unless they're given a military-style budget. Yeah. I agree it's messed up, but it might be the best thing that they can do.
Give them a percentage of future litigation.
1%. 1%.
But they do it like jury duty, where it's like they just get 12 random people and say, have you ever heard of like a computer that has a screen without a keyboard? No. Okay, there you go. Patent it. Next. It's a thing you hold in your hand and has buttons on it. Never seen that before. Okay, there you go.
I've never seen that.
I blew it. We were talking about iOS 10 features. I said there were two big ones that everybody would see. We mentioned messages. We didn't talk about notifications. Let's take a break. We'll talk about notifications. And then if there are hidden features in iOS 10 that are as exciting but people aren't paying as much attention to, maybe we can cover those too if such things exist. But first, I thought it'd be fun to open my trunk. My trunk is here from Trunk Club. You know, I've talked about Trunk Club before. Trunk Club is for people who want to look nice, dress nice, but don't like to shop. In other words, most of the men I know. And here's the deal. With Trunk Club, it's not a subscription. It's a service. You get a free stylist who will help you pick stuff that suits your style, what you're trying to project, the image you're trying to project. You know, they say dress for the job you want, not the job you got. That's why I dress like a bum. But with Trunk Club, I can dress a little bit nicer. So I have my own personal stylist. I talked to her. I explained kind of what, you know, I'm looking for. I want to kind of dress a little, you know, I don't do it, wear Trunk Club stuff all the time. It's like when I go out, I want to kind of snazzy is the word I use. She laughed, but I think she understood. You give her your measurements, your likes, your dislikes. She helps you find the clothes. But what they do is they put up a page. You say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, maybe, whatever. Then they pack them in a trunk. This is my trunk. Just came. I have not looked at it. By the way, you have still paid nothing. Not a penny. Nothing for shipping. Nothing for the stylist's time. Nothing for these clothes unless you keep them. And that's when you pay. You pay for only the clothes you keep. I don't even know if you can see over my shoulder here what's in this trunk, Karsten. Hey, you kind of can. There you go. It's a little out of focus. So you see it's nicely packaged up. I got some shoes this time. Here's the contents list. They even have bow ties. You know I love my bow ties. I like that. So here's the deal. You have a little fashion show with your girlfriend, your honey, your boyfriend, whatever, and you show them and you say, "What do you think? Should I keep the gingham checked shirt? How about this nice chambray shirt? Oh, here's a pretty dusty rose." This is all stuff that I picked on the website, but you know, you want to try it on and make sure it looks good for you. They even have shoes. Let's see what I got here. I can't remember what we picked out. Oh, I like these. Some nice here. You could show it up on this. Yeah, there. Some nice canvas boat shoes, perfect for this season. So your stylist, my stylist, has taken the time to know what I like. And I have to say, this is, I think, my fourth trunk or fifth trunk. They're not shipped automatically. You say, okay, I'm ready for another trunk. And then you go through the process again. But I notice as I've done this, she's gotten closer and closer. She pays attention to what I didn't pick and is getting closer and closer. So every trunk gets better and better. You just keep what you want. Then that's the only thing you pay for. You've got 10 days to try on the clothes. It's not a subscription service. Shipping is always free. Keep what you like. Send back what you don't. This is the easiest way ever to shop. Well, this is another set. Okay. Is it the same or they're slightly different? Maybe they're slightly different. I'll have to look. So, Trunk Club, here's the deal. Make a statement at the next big event in your calendar with a look that's handpicked just for you and your style. Get started today at trunkclub.com/MacBreak. And by the way, this is from Nordstrom. So, it's backed by the highest quality and standards in quality and customer service. They have it for men. They have it for women. Premium clothes, expert advice, no shopping. Okay? Now you know what I'm talking about? Trunkclub.com/MacBreak. And it's nice when you get the trunk.
It's so great. It's just so smart.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I wished for this for years.
Yeah. Like who wants? I mean, some guys really like to go shopping. Well, everybody likes to shop. It just depends what you're shopping for. Like you could take me to a hardware store and I'll stay there for days.
But yes.
Clothes shopping, not so much.
I just pick up something off the rack, make sure the slide is approximately what I remember my size being, and then I walk out and I get home and I can't wear it and it goes in a pile.
Exactly. And this is nice. And then the trunk is ready to send back. They even send you the shipping back. You don't pay anything for the shipping to or from. And then you're done. This couldn't be easier. And you get, you know, what I would do is I'd like every season I'll get a new trunk. That way I get seasonal clothes each time. Trunk
Club. Make me look good. That's all I want. Just make me look good.
Yeah. That's what I said to them.
I just want to add that's another revolution of the past 3-4 years. I can't remember the last time I bought. The last time I bought clothes in an actual store was for an upcoming wedding where I needed like really nice dress clothes, and they needed to make sure that I was leaving in 3 or 4 days, and I went to Nordstrom, actually, a retail store, and it worked great. Everything else, if I have time to, quote, shop, I will just buy it online. It's like you get it. It fits. If it doesn't fit, yes, it's a little bit of a hassle to send it back, but not as much of a hassle as marking out an afternoon to drive to a store or a mall and try things on and be told that we're not used to serving sir who is quite so short relative to his waist size, sir.
These Jedi robes are not off the rack.
I hate that. Yeah, and, you know, exactly. I love my stylist because I was honest with her. I gave her measures. And then not once did she laugh. Not once.
No. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you. All right. Let's talk about notifications. I have to say, I think this is the biggest change in iOS 10. Messages is just a toy. Notifications changes how you use your iPhone.
Yep. It's a very conceptual change. The They've sort of created a notification space that's persistent. So it used to be you had quick replies and you could if Andy sent me a message, I could quickly respond to it and then it would disappear and I'd go back to what I was doing. But if we were trying to have a conversation, I'd have to either stop what I was doing, go to the messages app and try to find my way back, which has always been laborious in iOS, and just sort of like ping pong around. But now when a message comes in, you can, again, 3D touch, eventually you'll be able to touch and hold too. And it brings up this persistent notification space where I can engage in a full conversation using full functionality with Andy. And then when we're done, it's like, yeah, see you at the comic store. Yeah, absolutely. Press the button, press the cancel, and I'm right back where I was doing. And that's a huge spatial revolution. It's made, we've had this kind of sort of with widgets before and Siri sort of its own space. And now you have these very distinct things. And Apple's really smart about it because when I first saw the demo, I was, do not take widgets away from Notification Center. The ability to swipe down from anywhere, use one pCalc, swipe away is the most really convenient for me. And if I have to go to the home screen, swipe over to find widget space and use it there, I'm going to feel like I'm back in 2010 again. And they didn't. Now on the lock screen, there's widgets to the left. On the home screen, there's widgets to the left. On Notification Center, there's widgets on the left. There's notifications in the middle on the lock screen. There's notifications on the middle in Notification Center. And when you're in an app and that notification comes in and you press that button, it's spatially exactly in the same place. And it lets you sort of become accustomed to what would otherwise be a much more advanced, sophisticated, and maybe even complicated interface. And after a couple of days, I was just using it. It's really frustrating now because some apps, you know, they just can't update for it. So you get a Facebook notification, you 3D touch into it, expecting people to interact, and all you get is a dismiss button. And I know, like, in my head, I'm like, you know, I know that they can't update for it. But otherwise, I'm just like, this is so inconvenient. It's like going back to iOS 9. It's really powerful once you get the hang of it.
Yeah, I mean, this is more than just adding a feature to the notification system. And it's even, I think, bigger than overhauling the whole notification system itself. I really think that this is an extension to the very concept of how people interact with iOS, because it really isn't notifications. It really is the concept of widgets, making them meaningful. It's an extension of what 3D touch was able to bring to the experience. I think that the whole movement is to try to avoid forcing a user to launch an app unless they absolutely need the full functionality of that app. If they can, as Renee said, people don't necessarily need to launch messages. They don't want the fully operational firepower of messages. They just want to participate in a rich conversation with this friend who wants to talk to them about this thing. Similarly, the Maps app, I don't necessarily need to find out what the tramway service is across a gorge in Austria. I just need to know when is the next train home and how do I get there. So all of these things are ways to put it. Like, for instance, on the lock screen, I love the way that now the lock screen is can be kind of the hub of the whole iPhone experience if that's relevant to you. How many times do you just take your phone out of your pocket to either find out what's going on or action on something that's just happened? Now the lock screen is not just a place to let you know that you're going to want to wake up the phone and launch an app now. It really is, here's the information, here's what you can do that's relevant, operations that are relevant to that information. And because of 3D touch, you can Apple can bury all that behind a very, very simple interface that works great in a card style metaphor. So this is one of those things where it's going to be pretty exciting, not necessarily this fall, but a year from now when all of these apps are out in the field. When you 3D touch on something, you don't necessarily get launch the app. You will get something that's built from months and months and months of user experience and feedback. And it really is an exciting time for iPhone. This is it could be something that if we were to take a look at the iPhone of from 2 years from now, the phone itself might be almost indistinguishable from the iPhone 6, but it will be such a completely new thing. You might think that, oh, God, too bad for Apple. This is the new revolutionary phone operating system that absolutely kicked the iPhone's ass. And, oh, damn it, I wonder who makes it. And you turn around, oh, good, it's an Apple logo. Good.
Yeah, it's super interesting because they didn't just, like, it sounds like it's just notifications. But to Andy's point, if you're in Maps now, because Maps have app integration, you don't have to leave Maps to do OpenTable or to use Uber. It sounds like a simple thing. But, again, when humans change context, when you change rooms, when you change apps, you forget. You see what's in front of you. I was supposed to call an Uber. Now I'm 5 minutes late. I'm not going to get there in time. Instead, you see the address, you Uber immediately, and it's a better human interaction. And that's true for Siri, and it's true for messages now. Like, just the idea, Leo, that we could all get together and, you know, like Andy's order for food and Alex's order, and then all of that just comes together, the delivery arrives, and none of us have to open all these different apps or try to explain to each other what we want to get. It's just so much more convenient.
We've mentioned this before, but it's interesting because I think both Android and Apple iOS are moving in the direction of getting away from launching apps into more of a contextual experience where the phone just does what you want to do wherever you are.
It's like the move from websites to web services. We're getting that with apps to app services.
Right. Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of just-in-time kind of information that you want to log into something, you know, whether it's a receipt, whether it's a little bit of information, you know, all those things that it is really cumbersome to go through that whole process to get that piece. So having these things kind of fly up and disappear, I think, is going to be amazing.
What is required for this to work? Apps have to be rewritten to take advantage of this, or?
They have to add the iOS 10 APIs.
Okay.
And also, I think a lot of these things are going to have to be reconceptualized.
Yeah.
Apple, over the past couple of years, with the Apple Watch and other technologies, Apple has spent a lot of time sort of encouraging developers to take a 3-day retreat, do not take any technology with you, and just have a notepad and a pen and decide what is the purpose of your app. Because if you just say, here is the interface that we spent 3 or 4 years building over five different larger versions, and you try to, I'm going to take that and I'm going to put it in a widget screen, or I'm going to put it in a watch screen, you will make something that's very, very bad. But if you say that our app is an app for capturing your ideas, you will start to think of, okay, so if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to, in a widget form on a lock screen, what part of that feature, of that function, is the user going to expect? That's why I think there's going to be a year when we see the really elegant stuff coming on. But a lot of reconceptualization is going to be necessary.
And are you still required to have an app? You know, you can't just live on it as a...
On iOS, yes. On the Mac, they've allowed some app. Like, for example, some photo filter extensions don't have apps. They're called headless apps because there's no downloadable container. On iOS, it's a management thing. It's the same reason why if you delete a stock app on iOS 10, it doesn't really delete because they're so tiny and they're so integrated. It just hides the icon. But to get it back, they just have you go to the app store. It doesn't really live on the app store, but it's expected behavior. So you could theoretically have a headless app because they've done all the work to make that possible. But if you downloaded just a keyboard and no app, how would you know how to use it? If you wanted to delete it, you know, how would you know? So people, I think they've kept the container idea around because it's useful to people. But I remember Brad Ellis, who's really, really well-known iOS designer. He was at Pacific Helm for a while, and he's done a lot of really famous apps. He was saying when the Apple Watch and iOS 8 came out that you don't really need an app for some things. For some things, the notifications are going to be the most powerful and important experience. And if you just spend your time nailing that, then you'll have 90% of the functionality all your users ever want. I think there's a lot of, to what Andy said earlier, a lot of truth to that.
Well, we're working on something that is heavily notification based. And one of the things that we're really thinking about is having the app really just manage preferences and how you set things up. And, you know, if you're going to, some of the management tools, and that's really all it does, because the whole thing is designed to sit inside of notifications. You know, and we were just trying to figure out, you know, that whole process, but there's resource constraints.
So like some of the keyboards still use the app because they can't, there's not enough RAM or storage for them to have all the functionality in that keyboard. So that's why they ask you for extended access so they can actually pull the app, get more stuff and present it to you.
Right.
It also changes lock screen behavior. Now, this is going to be an interesting situation because the full functionality requires you as you mentioned earlier, to allow people to send messages on your behalf.
And see all your widget information.
And locking it. However, I suspect a lot of people will want to do this. In fact, Wired magazine even had an article that says with iOS 10, your iPhone's basically just a lock screen now. If you allow it, you don't ever have to get out of the lock screen. You could do a lot of what you want to do.
And you can't play Pokemon in the lock screen.
Okay, you're right. Yeah. There's some things you might have to.
It's that same...
That's a really good point. That I think that a lot of people are going to want to make for them an intelligent choice that I don't care if I'm compromising my security by keeping all these notifications visible. Just like I'm in the habit of not leaving my wallet on the restaurant table when I leave to go to the bathroom. I'm willing to take my wallet and put it in my pocket to avoid having to put it in a box and lock it. I think once the next iOS comes out, a lot of people are going to say I would much rather have no restrictions on what can go on my lock screen, but I will now be much more careful about making sure that my phone is screened down when it's out where people can see it, and making sure that I take it with me, even if I'm leaving for just a minute.
You can imagine a period in time when the home button goes away and the biometrics are in the screen, and they're maybe ubiquitous in the screen, and it recognizes, you can set it so that it recognizes the touch of your finger and then shows you that information. A lot of this stuff gets built for the future.
I think that we're, you know, multiple verifications with, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, some of the Jason Bourne type stuff where we're looking at, you know, facial structure plus your phone, you know, plus, you know, your you know, voice recognition.
Windows 10 does that
voice,
already.
My voice is my passport.
Yeah, Windows right, 10 so, has with Hello has looks at your face.
And I think that those things, I mean, Iris will be very complicated. Iris and Retina are probably a long way out, but the other ones are fairly easy. And you know, it's one thing to hack your fingerprint. It's one thing to hack some other things, but you get to two or three of those, and it would be almost impossible to hack those well. And I think a lot of times now that I'm used to using my Apple Pay and I'm used to getting in with my finger, I find passwords seem to be frustrating.
The funny thing for me is how our behaviors change, because the iPhone really only has two hardware buttons, and that means that it should be highly differentiated. But because of the way the home button worked, we used it as a de facto wake button.
Right.
So you had the wake button on the side and the home button on the front. And you could push either one to wake your iPhone. And that really wasn't the intended purpose, but it became the purpose. And then you got Touch ID, and Touch ID 2 was so fast. You know what Craig Federighi said, you just blow past your lock screen, and people had forgotten there was a sleep-wake button because no one ever used it. You just used the home button. And so then they tried saying, well, use the sleep button for that and use the home button for that, but you can't really fight habit. So now there's no more swipe to unlock. One of the most distinguishing features of the original iPhone is just gone. And it says, so now you put Touch ID on and it says, just click the home button to open.
Right.
So at first you get the lock screen notifications, then you can press your way in. And some people had a lot of trouble adjusting.
I think people aren't going to like, some people aren't going to like it, because it means if you don't want to sit on the lock screen, you have to do two things, right? You have to unlock it and then press it again.
Yeah, and previously the people were upset because it would go right through the lock screen.
I know.
You'll never make everybody
I understand the issue, yeah. It's challenging.
And I think there'll probably be a setting that lets you choose which one, because it's the same action.
Yeah, that would be nice. Go ahead.
To relate to what we're talking about, Notification Center now, it groups things by apps, which is great. And it has a little dismiss button like it always did, and it just dismisses one section. But if you 3D touch that, it gives you, like the Apple Watch, dismiss all, which is something people have been asking for on iOS for years and years and years. So you can 3D touch that, dismiss all notifications are gone, everything is clean, you can relax again.
So if you get iOS 10 beta, and again, be careful, it's not fully baked, it's still a beta.
Yep.
But if you get it, you will certainly notice the differences in messages and notifications. But are there other things that you would point to that people should pay attention to? Some people are saying the new control center is a big improvement.
I have mixed feelings. So like on Notification Center, you swipe sideways to tab, but the visual doesn't change. Control Center used to be one thing where you had all your toggles, all your apps,
swipe
all your media controls.
Bottom.
Yeah, and it would just be there. But now there's a three-tabbed Control Center. And in some ways, it's nice because it's more roomy. A lot of iOS 10, the information density is much lower. So you have fewer things. Like those notifications are really big now on the screen. And yeah, you can scroll through them. But for people who want to see a lot of data at a glance, it's less good because you have to scroll through them. And Control Center is like that. You don't get as much on each of those panels. So yes, you do get like beautiful album art if you swipe over and see the music panel. And if you swipe over again, you have the HomeKit panel and you see these big thumbnails. And you know, you can turn on your devices. But you have to actually swipe between tabs and you see those tabs change. Those are rounded rectangles and you see them physically move. And to me, that's visually slow. So even if it's really not slower than Notification Center, it looks slow to me. And if I want to get to the music controls, I launch this, I have to go. It's got great new functionality. You can 3D press on the flashlight button and choose the intensity of your flashlight,
for example.
Or 3D
they may
press.
Have overloaded what was a very simple, and should probably be a very simple interface.
Well, once or just visually make it look faster.
Yeah,
yeah. I do think though that that area of the experience is ripe for revolution. I've always wondered I wondered how long it was going to take before you could force touch on, for instance, the Wi-Fi widget and get popped up. Here are a list of active Wi-Fi networks you can switch to right now, because it still takes way too many operations when you're. When you're home and you're on the wrong Wi-Fi network, or I take out my iPad at a Starbucks and I really want to use my phone at a Dunkin' Donuts. The Dunkin' Donuts has really bad Wi-Fi. Wendy's and Starbucks has great Wi-Fi. And so I go into Dunkin' Donuts. I really want my iPad to connect to my phone and not to the on-air Wi-Fi, but it automatically, the first one it saw was the in-house one. And it takes me so many taps every single time I enter this space to switch from one Wi-Fi hotspot to another, and I feel like why can't I do that right here? There's a logo that lets me turn it off and turn it on. Why can't I do it from right here?
Little public service announcement: Pokemon Go has been updated.
Yep,
minutes ago to 1.0.1. They say they fixed the Google account scope issue, so they made good on their promise not to do that. They also have fixed some other pain points. Trainers don't have to enter their username and password repeatedly after a forced logout. That will stop people triggering the Google timeout.
Yeah.
New stability to the Pokemon Trainer account login, which means maybe instead of using Google, you'd want to use that. Fixed resolved issues causing crashes. And at the end, the Niantic team says, again, we are humbled by the overwhelming response. Thank you. So.
Yeah.
If you're concerned about the permissions issue, you might want to hie thee to the App Store.
I think you have to log in again once you update. You won't lose anything, but you do have to log in. Yeah, you have to revoke it and then log in again.
Right, that would make a lot of sense. What else in iOS 10 should we... By the way, playing Pokemon Go on an iPad really is a luxury experience.
Especially when you're out at the park and you're just holding it up and people think you're taking
you
a photograph and
they're
going to get angry. And they say, no, I'm not taking a photograph. I'm playing Pokemon Go.
Now, if you have the Pro, you're really golden. You can, you can say, I'm painting a picture.
0.9 inches of Pokemon Leo.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. There's a Rattata. I better go get that while we... Anything else you want to mention about iOS 10?
You know, we talked about it a fair bit before, but I think that Swift Playgrounds is definitely worth playing.
I forgot to even download it. You have to download that separately, right?
Yeah, you download that separately once you have it installed, and it is. The night before, I was sitting with my daughter, who's 6 years old, and she's like. Pretty deep into the levels, kind of working through the stuff, and it's just a lot of fun, and she's learning how to code, and she's excited about it. And so if you think you want to get your kids into it, it's really important to have them thinking through that stuff. And they may not become programmers. I mean, she sees herself as a ballet dancer, and she's very good actually. As well as an incredible artist, but having her have that I think that the mixture of all the things she's already doing in life that is kind of more analog, with thinking about functions and things like that,
that would be a good reason to upgrade your extra iPad or something like that, so that you could do that.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, it's worth, if you're really thinking about if you can. It's worth getting an iPad for your kids to learn how to program.
To get iOS 10 beta, go to beta.apple.com. You'll have to sign into your Apple account. It doesn't have to be a developer account. That's why it's, because it's a public beta now.
And you don't have to register the UDIDs anymore. I mean, it's
a lot simpler. So what you'll do is you'll log in, you'll enroll your device in. In fact, I'm going to do it for the iPad. I think it's worth doing it on the iPad too.
Georgia, who won't update production software, put the beta on her iPad and both her kids' iPads, and they sit there together doing playgrounds. Yeah. And it's amazing.
Yeah, I think it might be worth doing. So I'll do that. Even though this is the one I use for iOS today, might as well just go all in. What will happen is once you enroll, you'll get an email with a link to a profile.
Yeah.
You want to go to that on your device, iOS device. download the profile. Once you do that, you've modified your device. You've told it that you're a developer. Sorry, I have to get a Duo. I'll be
just
right
do
back.
A backup if you can. Even do an iTunes backup beforehand in case you want to roll back, because some people just won't be happy and you'll want.
It just gives you the flexibility. And one more little tip, and I mentioned this yesterday on iOS Today, check the box that says encrypt the backup, because that way your passwords are preserved, and it makes it a lot easier if you decide to roll back. It's not a big pain in the butt to roll back. You have all your settings will be there.
And people have been asking about the remote app, and it is available on the developer site, but it downloads as something you have to install over Xcode or iTunes, so it's not as easy, and it's not available as easily as the Playgrounds app. So that's why you won't see it when you install it.
Oh, there's a new remote app?
Yeah, it's got all the Siri functionality for the Apple TV.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, exciting. Okay.
I don't think that there's – I don't want to walk over one of our sponsors today, but I don't think that there's any other manufacturer or operating system that benefits holding on to your old phones and your own devices like Apple. It's like I have a bunch of previous Android phones that are kind of okay, but they're not really that useful. But every single iPad and every single iOS device I have is still in use somewhere, not as a primary device, but as a beautiful nightstand device or as a beautiful second screen somewhere, or as will be the case in iOS now. Stuff that will be taken out of drawers and again snatched back from children, because you can find so many new uses for it as this system builds out.
So I'm going to go ahead. After you unroll the iOS device and download the profile, you just go to settings and there'll be an update for you. And that'll
basically it puts you on the beta path, and you'll stay on that beta path. If you want to stop getting betas, just go in and delete that profile. It's in general settings, general. Configuration profiles and get rid of it,
and then you'll roll back. That's good.
Well, you won't roll back. You won't you'll want to restore your phone, but if you just want to stop getting, like, let's say iOS 10 comes out, 10.0 comes out, and you don't have any interest in the 10.1 beta, you can just go delete that configuration profile, and it'll no longer pull for it.
It won't say you've got it anymore.
And the Sierra beta, public beta, came out as well the same day.
Yeah, I was just about to ask for that. So same process, you enroll your Mac in it.
Yeah, and it gives you a coupon code for the Mac App Store. Then you go there and it downloads it for you.
Okay, good, cool. And what do you think? Is that worth doing, or is that something to hold off on?
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that are a little bit goofy with it, and they're different for everybody, like any beta. But it adds Siri, which is fun to play with. They changed the command key, like the default keyboard shortcut for that. So now you, instead of just pressing command space like you would for Spotlight, you hold it down and you get Siri. And I've been using Siri more than I thought I would, because again, they've made it persistent, which is really weird when you think about it, because you're used to asking Siri for something, then it goes away. But now Siri can just hang out if you want, and you can add the results to Notification Center. So if you do a search and you want that search to be updated live, just add it to Notification Center. And then you can leave Siri results out. So if you search for something, you can go over and work on it and then just ask Siri for something else. And if you're in a full screen app, it's really handy, because you can have Siri do like basic settings changes and things for you without you having to scroll over, go back to a, you know, multi-screen mode, pick something. So I found it to be pretty convenient. It doesn't seem like the massive change that iOS 10 is in terms of the concept of what an operating system, how it interacts with you in very short intervals, much less what like the watchOS differences are. But it once again adds really important features to the Mac, the least of which is accessibility for people who just never had voice command functionality on the Mac at all. And I think that's found improvement for them.
You'll have a restart on iOS, and I presume on Sierra, on macOS as well.
Yep.
And once you do, then you get to do the up.
And again, you'll stay on the beta until you decide to get off.
What happens then? Okay, so as I remember then, when the release version comes out, you're no longer in the beta track.
You are.
So you stay on the beta.
Previously, track. I believe you, I have been, and I don't know if there's a difference between the developer beta and the public beta, but I think once you're enrolled, there's a chance you might get it.
So that's when you delete the profile and start over.
If you don't want to continue. And some people do, and some people just stay on and don't download the new software.
Right. So here is just, you could show this. There's what you'll get eventually, the iOS 10 public beta 1. You'll be invited to download it. It's not a huge download, is it? I mean, it's 1.8 gigabytes.
No, they're way better at optimizing that stuff. And with mine, on one of the devices I had, that I have a 16 gigabyte iPad just that I got because I didn't really need an extra iPad. I just needed to review it. And it said, you know, we've optimized your storage. We're deleting these two large games, but we'll put them right back for you after we've installed the operating system, because we need the room for staging.
That's good. So that's the way to handle it.
Yeah.
That's the way to handle it. Yeah. So, sorry, you don't get an email. Somebody, Scooter X, thank you for correcting me. I thought you, I read somewhere you got an email. I didn't get an email. I just got a, it said go here.
You could sign up to find out when the public beta would be available, and then they would email you. That was what the page used to have on it.
Got it, got it.
And people were asking why there's no public beta for Apple TV or for watchOS.
Yeah.
They're both harder to install and much, much more difficult to roll back on. For example, the previous watchOS, not this one, you actually had to ship your watch back to Apple. So it's better not to have people, like, it's fun to play with those things, but if anything goes wrong, it's a hard thing to fix.
A guy who styles himself muscle nerd on Twitter, an iPhone hacker, is pointing out that there are even more unencrypted chunks in the new iOS 10 beta. The bootloaders, which had previously been encrypted, are no longer encrypted. The RAM disk, the kernel, and the main file system. What do you make of that, and why would that be significant?
My understanding is that they took an honest look at the system and they realized that there was no userland data there and there was no need to encrypt it. And that just made it easier for them to maintain and easier. There was some slight performance enhancements, but basically it just allowed them to optimize the system better.
No reason to encrypt it if there's nothing private in it.
Yes.
It's the same thing for all of us, right?
And with Apple, it's an interesting company because they'll sometimes keep doing something just because it's easy, like there's no reason to go back and change it. But they often go back, they just look and they say, well, we did this way last time, we'll just keep doing it. But the actual process is, do we still need to do that? Was that a good thing to do? Was it a good decision? Is there a better way to do it? And if they can, they'll change it. And this sounds like it's one of those things.
If you want a reason to go to Italy, Apple is opening its first iOS Developer Academy at the University of Naples. Wow, that sounds really, really cool.
Bellissimo.
San Giovanni a Teduccio, a coastal suburb of Naples. The free academy will provide more than 200 students with practical skills and training on developing apps in the first year. That is really cool. Is it free for non-Italians? I don't know. You can find out more at the University of Naples website. You do have to take an online test in Italian or English. And then you go to the interview stage. So it's not automatic. You have to kind of get in. But once you get in, it is free. It's interesting. Apple's obviously subsidizing this. And their goal is to get the next generation of entrepreneurs in Italy.
I'm curious if they're picking this based on they're seeing like a, you know, in the back end, they're seeing a high demand from a certain country with a low supply.
Must be, right?
Of developers and say, okay, we're going to put something in. Or if it's some kind of, you know, deal with the government, there's a bunch of other possibilities. I think that.
Yeah. There are a lot of things going on like that. Google, for instance, just announced that they're basically giving away free Android training to just thousands and thousands of installations in India and basically trying to get everybody learning how to write Android apps in India, which is not a big mystery, given that Android is well prepared to have been the biggest phone platform in India. And now that Apple is looking for other places to sell phones and haven't been buying iPhones in bulk yet, is probably best to make sure that the next generation of really great developers starts off on Android as opposed to being seduced by iOS.
I think we talked about this previously, but I signed both my godkids up for Apple's doing the Apple Camp, which is a free camp offered at all the Apple stores in the summer. And they have a week of code this year for the first time. And they'll learn video game programming, not with Swift, because Swift is for 12 and up technically, and this is for 8 to 12. But they're going to learn basics of video games with some script tools. And then they get to program Sphero, like do some robot programming with Sphero. And it's I forget which week it is. I think it's 2 weeks from now. And you can just check at your local Apple store. But those are great, too, because they have a high ratio of instructors to kids. And they provide a really good opportunity for kids to get introduced to that stuff.
And beware of a new attack. You know, we've done this a lot on the show, sometimes accidentally. Sometimes, I'm ashamed to say, intentionally triggered your Echo or your Shlomo or your Google by saying keywords. Apparently, bad guys are trying to do the same thing, embedding hidden voice commands in black box code, dying things, robots, you know, toys that have secret Siri commands in the sounds. The attack works by playing specifically crafted, obfuscating commands easy to recognize by the targeted devices, but are difficult to understand by human listeners. This is a YouTube video that says it's going to demonstrate this attack.
For the purpose of this demo, the phone was placed 10.1 feet away from the speakers as shown.
They have a phone on a desk in a conference room. Command 1.
Copy, Google.
Wow, so that was kind of a robotic OK Google.
Copy, Google. Open xkcd.com.
It's
working.
Scary.
Whatever it's doing is working. I don't know, though, if you can get Shlomo or Google or Alexa to, I mean Echo to do anything bad.
We need the master control processor from Tron.
That's what they're saying is you could put this in a toy, for instance, and people would think it was just a toy sound. And this demo is all with Google, but they say they can do it with Siri.
Well, when you think about the Internet of Things, I mean, I can see a spy thriller where someone, you know, gets into their stereo system or something else or has something like this that calls out something that then attaches to their lighting system, which then, you know, blows up the house kind of thing. You know, so there's a lot of interesting things when you
certainly could be annoying. I mean, you could
be annoying. Yeah.
Yeah. You could turn up somebody's thermostat or, you could definitely prank them.
It's not that this thing can by and of itself kill or change a thermostat or anything like that. It's more like the things that I more worry about are, is there a weakness in this really easy to get to device that could establish a presence on my network? So basically you've got your attackers on the beach at the very least, because you have this really, really poorly secured refrigerator or this really, really poorly secured media player inside a stereo, and because the people who made that aren't thinking like security people, they're thinking about stereo makers. But now it's just a beachhead. They still have to storm the beach and get into the concrete pillboxes, but they're one level closer to success than they would have been if not for the fact that someone did not put a simple piece of open source security software on my toaster.
So I'm installing iOS 10 on the iPad. We'll see if it's done before the show is over. It's moving pretty quick, though, I have to say. It's only been a few minutes. Our show today, we're going to get your picks of the week. Guys, cue them up. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your next professional website, even if it's just your personal website, from a simple cover page to the perfect portfolio, a professional blog, an online store. Squarespace makes it easy. You start with templates designed by the best designers, but also the best engineers, to give you the state of the art in web design, mobile responsive. So the site doesn't have a separate mobile site. It looks great on all size screens, just kind of automatically, magically. E-commerce is built into each and every page. They have some amazing specialized templates for musicians, for photographers, for writers. It's very easy to get started. You just go to squarespace.com and they've got a free trial for you. And I started just setting up a cover page. You know, I wanted just a one page with some images and links to my social networks. It was so easy. Then I thought, well, I should attach my blog to it. So I did that, imported all my blog stuff easily. And then I thought, I should put my pictures there too. Used to keep them on SmugMug. Why not put it? And that was easy. Now my event calendar is there. It's so easy that you just do more and more. And your site looks like it was designed by a pro, because it was, but they're not cookie cutter. And I think so many of these other web hosting companies give you sites that you can tell, I know immediately where it came from. Not Squarespace. They really are beautiful. They just unveiled some really fantastic new magazine style templates, you know, with the grid style landing pages that have infinite scroll at the bottom, related posts, the author profile, integrated search right in the header. All of which means if you're publishing, for instance, on the web, this is the best way to do it. Regardless of skill level, Squarespace websites can be made to look unique with just a few clicks. And if you're a developer, the sky's the limit. You can do anything you want. They have a blank template you can start with, or start with one of their existing templates, get access to all the code, modify it at will. And of course, there are, and Lisa did this with her new business. She wanted a really nice website. And she said, you know, I'm just going to hire a Squarespace designer. There are a lot of independent designers and developers and setup experts for hire. Very affordable. What a great job they did. Worked directly with her. They don't work for Squarespace, but Squarespace has a directory of them. It's all there. And by the way, if you have built or contribute to three or more active Squarespace websites, they want you to know about the Squarespace Circle, which is a kind of a club for heavy Squarespace users. Circle membership includes advanced guides, optimized support, six-month trial periods for new projects, and more. And if you have an idea, as I said, they not only have designers and developers, but even if you don't want to do that, you just want to get the domain name, they now sell domain names, Squarespace domains, over 200 top-level domains, of course, .com, .net, but many, many more. You can register your domain, and then unlike these, many of the other hosts, they'll give you a clean, spam-free parking page that looks great until you're ready to start building your site. So what this is definitely the best way to get that, you know, lock in that domain name before, you know, when you're ready to go. I love it. I moved my blog to it about a year ago, and I couldn't be happier. Start your free trial, squarespace.com. And when you do buy, just all we ask is use the offer code MacBreak. That way they'll know you heard about it on MacBreak Weekly. And you get a benefit too, 10% off. Squarespace, the place to make your next website. Time for our picks of the week. Who should I start with today? I better start with Andy, because if we don't start with Andy, somebody's going to steal his pick.
Exactly what it is now.
Yes. It is, of course, Prisma, that really cool photo filter app. And I in the show notes, I said that I'm sure that there are three people who have picked this. If this is the only one you've picked, I have an alternate.
No, Andy, you're the first. Nobody picked it yesterday in iOS today. You are the first. Congratulations. Okay. We saved it for you.
So if your eyeballs roll at the, oh, good, another photo filter app. Oh, look, now I can make I can make it look like a different kind of old Polaroid from 1963. No, this is a really amazing app that when I say that it takes photos and turns it into art, I don't mean that they add a blur filter and then increase the contrast so that it kind of looks like oil painting. I mean that it's actually using AI, it's actually using Deep Dream type technology to basically reinterpret it intelligently into different sort of formats, and the results can be almost shockingly good. I just put up a Google Photos album that will I quickly gave you an Instagram, but I put together a Google Photos album, and it's amazing. Here's a pic. Go to the picture when you get it of the flower I took in a hothouse, where it's a nicely done picture of a white flower.
Look at this. And so here's the original, which is a beautiful picture with lots of texture and just gorgeous.
And then Pixma, without doing anything but simply clicking on one of these filters, you would think that this was a really beautifully done watercolor.
Georgia O'Keeffe she's out of business.
I mean, and then there are so many of these different filters, and it's not like you have to screw around with a whole bunch of different settings. There are enough of them, and they're different enough that you just, here is a photo that is interesting to me. I'm going to see which of these filters does the most interesting thing to it. And there are stuff where if people did not know that this app existed, I feel as though if I made a really good archival print of it, of let's say no greater than let's say 5x7, and put it in a nice $40 frame and put it on the wall of a coffee house, I could get money for it as pretending to be actually cool, like original art.
It's really gorgeous. Wow.
It's just, again, sometimes it's just shockingly good. And the other thing, it really made me think a lot about how I used to be, and maybe to an extent still am, kind of a snob about Instagram filters and, is this really photography? And you're adding a fun effect, and it's good to make photography fun, but is it really stuff? Apps like this have turned my thinking around, that it's like in the 35 millimeter days in the 70s and 80s, you could buy like kits of different kinds of really wacky, literally color filters, like gradiated, like tobacco stain sort of filters and starburst filters. And no, you're not creating the starburst yourself, but you made the choice that I'm going to choose and use this filter. It really does usher in a new generation of photography where really the phone just, or your camera only does data capture, and then apps will then create an image based on that capture. Well, and I have so much more fun with these images. It really is like, it's like someone told me about the fun, what happens every time you buy a chainsaw or a Sawzall for the first time, where you take it out of the box and the first thing you do with it is you cut up that felled tree limb that you bought it for, and then that takes all of 5 seconds, and then you spend the rest of the day playing the game, a game called Let's See If It'll Cut This. And Prisma is the exact same thing. It's like, I scroll through and say, oh, I bet that flower picture might look interesting. And then there I am, like, fast forward, like, 3 hours later, I'm still, like, on the couch, like, going through photos I haven't tried it on that one yet. Really, really remarkable stuff. It's just amazing. There was a small bit of controversy when people found out that, oh my goodness, it's actually sending data. There's a stuff in the user agreement that says that we're going to be taking your data and doing things with it that actually turned into, well, no, we're not doing all this processing on device. We have to send this to a server and then send the results back down again in order to make things happen. It looks like a benign app. There is like one of the filters is sponsored by Palmolive, it appears. So maybe that's where they're getting their money. But good heavens, it's like I you would have to do some really awful things with my personal data for me to think that it's not worth it to get to get an app of this quality.
By the way, be careful because it is so popular. It's not available on Android. There are a lot of apps claiming to be Prisma. They may be malware. I wouldn't be very careful about what you download. It is iOS only right now, although Android's coming. And get it from Prisma Labs, Inc., mm-hmm. Prisma Labs Inc. There's also a pro tip: when you get it, it puts a watermark on all your images. And at first, I thought, "Oh, I guess I have to pay to get rid of that." No, it's just a setting. go into the settings and turn off the watermarks.
I actually think that's too bad, though. I was looking forward to, oh my goodness, if they want anything,
that's not
less
it,
than,
by the way. So they, you just did exactly what I said not to do, Karsten. That's not it. Do not get that one. Look at my screen, Karsten. There's a difference.
Did I give you the wrong?
No. That's it. Prisma Labs Incorporated.
Yeah. It's such a great app.
So again, I don't know. I doubt any of the Apple stuff is malware. Apple's pretty careful about that. But it's not Prisma if it's not from Prisma Labs, Inc. And it's free. That's some fake Prisma.
Yeah.
That does happen a lot where people, the developer will try to like, game the keyword so that if someone is searching for X, they'll find Y instead. And that does happen on the App Store too. It's usually not malware, but it means that you're not getting the app that 100 people on the same weekend are saying, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. You're instead getting a creepy, stupid.
The one Karsten's showing is the one I downloaded from Android.
Anytime an app is not available in a platform or a geography, there's a fake app there trying to take all its attention.
Yeah, I got all excited about it. And then I read the reviews, and one of the reviews said, this is not the Prisma you think it is. Don't get it. It might be malware. You should look at the reviews. That'll kind of help.
Not as good as the original.
Yeah. And I deleted it immediately. I hope it wasn't malware. But who knows? You never know. So be careful, but get it from Prisma Labs. And it supposedly is coming out soon on Android, which will be nice. But boy, it is. You know, there's also a trick. I don't know how I did it, but somehow I got it. I took a picture, and then I got a grid of all the possible app effects, and somehow it did them all. Mm. So in my photo stream had, like, there's 30 effects or something. Had 30 different ways to see the same image.
I'm looking forward to the next update to it, not like version 2, but I think that there are some quirks that they need to fix. For instance, when I... it's a very familiar interface. It will just simply either take a picture or look through your gallery. And whenever I have it load up my gallery, it's missing, like, there are a whole bunch of photos that I think are just plain photos, but for some reason, they're just not showing up. They're like empty spots in the grid. And I don't know whether it's rejecting some because we can tell already that this is not going to work out happily for you if you try to use this one, or if it's just a bug.
Yeah. And it has this activated promo code, and I'm not sure why. Maybe there's some additional... feature.
Maybe in the future there's going to be like they're going to release new filters or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. This was the button. Click save works automatically, and you will suddenly get every possible one of these saved. So I'm going to use this, and I'm going to say next.
And Prisma Leo.
And then so it's doing the server side. That's real. No wonder. I mean, that's really interesting.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's
I tried it on a couple of different devices, and they seem to work as quickly on each one of those.
And there's also, you can slide the effect in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Go for it. 100% all the time.
I always
do. Doctor Who version of Leo.
Yeah, I know. It's a little, this is, it doesn't work. You know, it does seem like, and you did the perfect pictures. It does seem like some pictures work better than others. The other thing they do that I love is they randomize the filters. So you don't always use the same filter, right? You get a different one every time. Oh, that's very
helps discovery because, yeah.
It's all there. It's just it's not that the same filter will be in the same place.
Right.
So it really does encourage you to, at some point, you will have seen the effects of every filter that's there.
And this is the one you said it was sponsored by Palmolive. I don't know why.
I don't know. Well, I think that there's just like a banner ad up there. I thought that is it going to put like Palmolive logos
in? No, it doesn't do anything. It's just in the filter for some reason.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Go ahead. Do anything you want. Palmolive Naturals. It's a nice filter.
Make enough money to keep the app going.
Yeah. Prisma Labs. Again, some images do not lend themselves well.
Yeah.
It looks like I have some sort of fire damage.
This could, I don't know if this would ever work, but if you could just tap a button and make your favorite comic book artist draw you.
Right.
Here's the Jim Lee version of Andy.
Right.
Here's the.
Well, they do have some comic booky.
There's a latency problem, 4 to 7 weeks, but.
Yeah. That's cool.
Here's the Art Adams version of Andy.
Prisma. You know, better on Paul not Simonson. On faces. let's just leave
it's
it
not
that.
Bad unless it's you, Leo. If it's anybody else, it looks fine.
Yeah.
No, I just mean like when you see yourself, you're always very critical of it. But when you see other people, it just
try to take a picture of yourself with like the lights like directly in your face as opposed to from the top down creating all those shadows.
Oh,
that
okay.
might make something better.
Okay. No shadows, in other words. Okay, that's much better.
much better in some ways.
crazy Guggenheim filter.
Hey.
There you go.
So much better.
New avatar. Right.
Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I'm not sure if I picked this, and if I have, it was a long time ago, and I thought I'd at least show an interesting use for it. I don't know how many of you guys use these Nest cameras, and you used to be Dropcam, and I think we've talked about it in the past, but we use them more and more and more. Like, so they're all through our office, and which has really helped us a lot. But I thought I'd show an interesting use case. This here is, that's my truck. We have a box truck. That's my truck and its stuff, and it's somewhere in Indiana going across country. And I know exactly where my load is and if it's shifting and not working and everything else. Now, what that is it's actually it's our Nest camera that then was paired up with a MiFi, right? So, and then the two of them, there's a little bit of geek in there that the two of them, Marty in our office wired the power to the 12 volt that is in the, you know, in the truck. So he wired that, hardwired it. We didn't just use the cigarette lighter. But outside, we took it out of the light actually, that was in the back of the truck. And so they got power all the time, and they're connected all the time. And we use them a lot for work site. You know, a lot of them are just kind of like these little portable ones that we just kind of, you know, we have them in our office, but they're great for, I just want to, you know, you point kind of two of them on either end of somewhere that you want to keep track of looking at each other. It's kind of hard to sneak up on them. And we use them a lot with, you know, for a lot of our location stuff where they're just something you can throw in your bag. And if you're leaving something behind, and you're working, they're really, really easy to just set up and hook to either a MiFi if you want to be totally self-contained, because they're, you know, easy to power. You know, we hook them oftentimes to Mophie batteries or some kind of battery. And so all of those things are really easy to use. And if you haven't used them, I think maybe we talked about it years ago, you know, the drop cams, but they now come in, I think, sets of three, which turn out to be a little cheaper if you really want a bunch of them, which we often do. So I've been amazed at how much we're using them somewhere. So I thought I would bring that back up to the surface if people aren't looking at them. I haven't found there's a lot of other cameras, and you can't talk to people through them. We try not to do that in the office. It makes everyone
it's very but, scary when but, a voice comes out of the camera. I just have to point out.
it's kind of funny. So anyway, it actually carries pretty well. So if you want to talk through your phone, and a lot of times what happens is my phone has, you know, working with our security, my phone, anytime someone's coming in and out of the office, I get a little notification. I can hit on it. I can see see what's going on. There. And so it helped a lot when we first moved into our office because the alarm kept on going off. There was some bad sensor, you know, and, And so they'd call me at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I did not have to drive over to figure that out. I would just look at my phone and say, no, false alarm.
This is a good time to actually get in the market for something like that. Amazon Prime, it's Prime Day, right? And yeah. Amazon Prime has a bunch of deals on security cameras.
Right.
So I don't know if they have – let me just see if there's one on the drop.
And there are a lot of them out there. I will say that I probably have half of them,
yeah.
half of the options. I bought through a lot of them, and that's why I thought I'd bring it up, is that I just haven't found one that had the same ease of use as far as setup, clustering 6 or 8 or 10 of them together, the record settings. And, you know, you discover all kinds of things about – you know, your kids, you know, you find out mostly that your daughter has been instigating all the fights with your son. And then he's only caught hitting her, you know, right. but after being, you know, viciously like poked at for 15 minutes and 20 minutes, he's been ignoring her. And then he finally hits back and then he gets punished for it. So those are the
I'd also be careful. We've learned, we mentioned this a couple of times on security shows, that some of these cameras don't have the best security. Yes. In one case, somebody bought a camera, sent it back because it didn't work, and then he found he could see somebody else's house. so that worked. And then people have recommended this to me. It's very cheap, the YI, the Yi cams. And this is also an Amazon Prime deal, $39.99 for these cameras. And now, have you tried these YI cams, these Yi cams?
I have a couple of them. They're a little bit more geeky to set up. So,
and then I would also worry a little bit about this security issue because these Chinese cameras, I don't think really pay a lot of attention to security.
Yeah, I think Nest is a big enough brand that I feel a little bit.
Yeah, it's from Google for crying out loud.
Right. And Google would never want any of our information.
No. Well, they keep it to themselves. That's the good news.
Exactly. yeah, exactly. So I think that, but I found that these are the ease of
use. It's worth, because they're expensive. They're like almost 200 bucks.
And if you buy the 3-pack, they turn out to be a little less, like 160 or something.
But you really believe these are the? I mean, we have them all over the place here, of course. But
of all the ones, I mean, you can definitely find cheaper ones. I definitely will agree. If you're looking for something that's ease of use, that is easy to put up, you'll get it set up in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I've set up 6 of them from bought them at the store at a location where we forgot them or decided we wanted to add more. And bought 6 of them, and in a half an hour talking to someone having coffee, I get them all attached to the Wi-Fi and inside my account and everything else. So, they're pretty easy to use. They do mess if you have an Osmo. Just as a little note, an Osmo, which is the DJI little handheld, you run around with a little controller, and you have your phone. It turns out that the phone doesn't work, can't connect to the Osmo. When you have a lot of Nests.
that's interesting.
It's a very obscure technical thing.
There's also a lot of bandwidth consumption, right? And we found that the HD camera is like a megabit each. So
yeah.
It can bog down a Wi-Fi network.
If you're paying per meg or per gig, it can do that. Yeah, it can take up some of that. So you want to think about giving it its own network as best you can. And it also, what I'm doing with it is a fairly expensive way to solve that problem in the truck because it's 3 days of just streaming. Now, we did turn the resolution down, so it's not full resolution. If we really need something, we'll turn it up. But we didn't leave it at HD, at 1080p the whole time.
Okay. Nest Cam, security camera. 3-pack is $500, a little under $500. So that's not quite as expensive. Your pick, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
So I'm bringing us full circle back to Pokemon for a couple of minutes. I'm not picking Pokemon, but I am saying if you are using any app like Pokemon,
yeah.
If you're playing Ingress, if you're playing anything outdoors, there's tremendous health benefits to that. Getting us out walking, get your sunscreen, absolutely, do all those things, but also get a good step tracking app. So on the iPhone, I really love Pedometer +++. It's _ David Smith's app. He has a bunch of them, Sleep +++ and others, and he's very good about updating them. And it's one of those things that just runs in the background, but keeps a tally of your steps and has a nice color coding so that you can sort of get a sense of your progress. And while you're out there catching stuff, this is a great way to sort of see how much exercise you're getting at the same time. And if you can benefit, I mean, one of the reasons I don't walk as much as I should is I kind of
don't have that much stuff to do. When I'm in a city, I walk all the time. But in the suburbs, it's a little bit boring. But now, you know, you walk over here and you catch those things and you walk over there and you do that. And suddenly it's miles and miles and miles, or sorry, kilometers and kilometers and kilometers. And it's worth keeping track of. So that's an app I really enjoy. The larger sense is if you're doing anything a lot that keeps the screen on and uses the radios a lot or uses GPS or uses LTE or uses anything, power is consumed by radiation. So the screen being on consumes a lot of power. GPS being on consumes a lot of power. LTE being on consumes a lot of power. I've been using backup batteries, and I know everybody has their own favorites. I've just stuck with Mophie because they've always worked really well, been super reliable for me. And I use the PowerStation Duo because it's got two plugs in it, so I can charge two devices if I have to. It'll charge an iPad, and it'll charge a lot and often. And most of the time, my friends just haven't brought anything with them, and they'll start to wear out. And this I can easily share. I can plug my phone in. I can plug someone else's phone in. So I've been using the PowerStation Duo for a couple of years, usually when traveling, but now I'm using it domestically because I am out there using all this battery and using all this screen and using all this GPS and all this radio. And it's draining things fast. And especially being on the beta, some people complain that the beta drains a lot of battery. Yes, it's a beta. It's re-indexing everything. It's doing all the photo processing, and it tries to do all that when you're plugged in. But even just downloading it and syncing photos and doing all these things, it's greater demand on your phone. And with the beta, it's not optimized the way it will be for the final release. So if you're doing any of these things, I can't recommend enough having either a good battery case or a good battery pack with you. It can be not life-saving, but phone-saving at times.
Yeah. If you don't have one just big burrito-sized phone charger... I mean, it's not just that. It's like you are good. It's one of those things you buy it, you have it inside your house, and that at some point in the course of the next 6 months, you're going to be glad that you have it, either because there's a hurricane coming and you've got 3 days, and now you at least have this little brick you can carry in your pocket that will give you 5 days of charge, or the first time you realize that, if I'm using my iPad as my notebook now, I can basically spend the entire weekend not giving a damn who's sitting at Starbucks for 5 hours at the one table that's next to a power outlet. It's basic material at this point.
By the way, just to extend that, having a little one is also great when you're at the airport and you just need something in your pocket with your phone. So having like a little extra one that just kind of sits there. And if you're giving away things that you want to spend a little bit more money and have people who actually walk by your booth or special clients or whatever, little batteries are great with your logo. Sound Devices gave me one, chargers. And I just was like, I had it for until I just accidentally destroyed it. But it was great until then.
It's the weirdest stuff too. I
just want to quickly point out that the other great thing, but some people don't know about these, is that the modern ones, they have really, really good power management chips in there too. So you charge it, you put it in your laptop bag, you forget about it until your phone or your iPad is low, and then you dig it out and think, oh, well, it's probably dead. It's been in there for 3 weeks. But no, it's still at 5 bars. So just charge it up, put it in there. It's like an MRE for your phone.
One of the things I discovered, I was in Winnipeg a lot, and it turned, and I didn't know why my battery was draining so much because I'm not roaming. And it turns out that those buildings were all so old and so solid that the signal could barely get in. And my radio was ramping up trying to grab even a bar or two, and it just caused drain. So I was reaching for that power battery over and over again.
I don't have a pick, but thanks to your suggestion, Renee, and yours, Alex, I finally have updated to iOS 10 on my iPad, and I've got Swift Playgrounds. It'll go either way. This is the very first thing. And I have to say, I'm really impressed with how they describe programming and how they do it. I think this is really going to be, in fact, it might even be the reason to get iOS 10 now if you want to learn to code or if you have kids who want to learn how to code. Let's enter some code. We want to get hit. What is he called? A byte to move to it, collect that gym. So they give you, maybe if I'd have to do it this way to get the suggestions unavailable. Well,
they had some sessions at WWDC with this, and they are really as educationally focused as they are engineering focused.
So cool. And I love this. So now I'm going to run this code here. Let's do it here like this. I'm going to run this code and see if I've actually got him to do the right thing. And he's moving forward. He's moving forward. And he's collecting the gem, and happy day. I've written my first lines of Swift code. This is great. This is adorable.
And you know, my daughter literally gets up and does that little dance when he does it. Back and forth and everything else. He has a lot of fun with it.
And you can see it from different angles. This is really cool.
It's beautiful. Like, this is educational material, and it's beautifully designed. Gorgeous. It's captivating. I mean, like, they've got top talent on this.
Oh my gosh. I mean, have they done a good job or what? Let's see. This puzzle just is like the last one, but now he needs to turn left. He needs to go 1, 2, and then turn left. Whoa. I shouldn't have tapped him. I think I made him jump straight up in the air. puzzle time. All right. There you go. Hey, thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun. And I apologize for the amount of time we spent on Pokemon Go. But, hey, got to catch them all.
Or you're welcome. You're welcome if you liked it.
Got to catch them all.
And we have a title.
No. Nobody would download it. That's Alex Lindsay. He's at the Pixel Core. Follow him on Twitter at Alex Lindsay with an A-L-I-N-D-S-A-Y if you want to find out what he's up to. Lots of interesting stuff, and he posts much of it on the Twitter, including workshops and things you can do with Alex and his team at Pixel Core. Thank you for being here, Alex.
Thank you.
Andy Anatko is at the Chicago Sun-Times, where he scribbles all the time when he's not taking pictures of squirrels and making them look like Modiglianis. Pictures, are you putting them on your Flickr, flickr.com/AndyI?
I'm moving more of them on Flickr. Unfortunately, since I've been doing a lot of stuff on Instagram, that becomes the, hey, here's a picture I recently took thing. But Flickr will still remain the, when I'm taking artistic photos that I've processed, hopefully, and this represents my art.
Yes. And what is your Instagram handle then?
You have to, the price of admission to the Anatko Fun Ride is, as always, spelling my last name. I'm just Anatko on Instagram.
I-H-N-A-T-K-O. And the mnemonic is, I have no idea how to spell this. I-H-N-A-T-K-O. There it is. Nice. And I am following you, of course, because I love all this stuff. That's how I knew when you went to Cambridge Typewriter, I saw the fun picture. Of a typewriter.
Again, you're heaven. We'll go. We'll have fun.
Yeah, no kidding. And more of these Prisma. I want to see more of these Prisma pictures. These are that flower is remarkable.
It's gorgeous.
I just could not. Yeah. Again, that's one of the it's a brilliant. Your app markets itself. If it's a photo processing app that people on Instagram want to use, and because I found out about this by seeing all these. Wow, I think it was actually Lisa's picture of you or something. The first Prisma photo that I saw on Instagram, and if it weren't for the watermark, I wouldn't have known what to Google for.
So. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. Thank you, Andy. And, of course, thanks so much to Renee Ritchie for all of your good work covering whatever the big story is. If you want more on Pokemon Go, you know where to go, imore.com. And don't forget
if you hate Pokemon Go, we also have full previews for iOS 10, yes. For OS, Mac OS Sierra, anything your nerdy heart desires.
Yeah, I really wouldn't, in fact, download or play with anything. In fact, you saw, I didn't know how to use messages until Renee showed me how. I should have just gone to imore.com. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. But if you can't do that, well, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is always available for all of our shows on our website, in this case, twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly, or subscribe. There are many, many ways to get podcasts, and we're on every single one of them, to my knowledge. Stitcher and the podcast app on your favorite device, Apple's podcast app, iTunes. There's also apps. Somebody tweeted me today, when are you going to be on Apple TV? I had to tell them there are 5 separate apps on Apple TV. We just have to have the new Apple TV.
We have a posse.
Yeah, we have a posse is right. So do get the show every week. You don't want to miss an episode. But I am sad to say it is time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye, everybody.